Welcome, everybody, to Horror Movie Yearbook. My name is Tim Long, one of your hosts, and I am joined tonight by one Mr.
Willie Gibbs.
Yes, sir.
Hi, Tim.
How's it going?
We're back. We're back, baby.
We took a couple of days off.
Yeah. Thanks for your patience.
Go down, so, yeah.
Yeah, but we're back.
It happens.
We had to fight some ninjas and stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We won.
Yeah, we totally killed them. We were pretty awesome doing it, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We don't have any footage, though.
Are there any horror movies with ninjas in them?
Ninja 3.
Ninja, is that the Domination?
Yeah.
That's really good. You don't know why?
Yeah.
Because there's a scene, like a sex scene, where she pours V8 juice all over herself.
Yeah, it's really hot. Yeah. Super into that.
Yeah.
William. Is there a more disgusting, like beverage you could pour on yourself? I guess V8 wouldn't be overly sticky.
Something more mucousy, I'd imagine. Like some sort of smoothie type.
Remember those like Sobe? Remember Sobe or Sobe, whatever it was?
Sobe, yeah, Sobe. Yeah. V8's pretty up there.
Yeah.
I can't think of much of a least sexy thing. Maybe one of those green shakes that like Batman or Iron Man always drinks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That wouldn't be good.
No.
Yeah, one of those like morning shakes with like raw eggs in it and stuff.
Yeah, you could that too.
That'd be gross.
You could pour raw eggs all over yourself.
Ew.
The Rocky.
Oh
role
man.
Play. Yeah.
Thank God they cut that sex scene from Rocky V. I'm happy about that.
They did. Not my version.
Oh. Uncut and uncensored.
Yeah. Willie, you got some feedback for us this week?
Yeah. We do have quite
feedback.
A bit of feedback.
Stop talking about pouring disgusting liquids all over yourself.
Yeah, exactly. I should say you can always send us feedback. Please do. We're on Facebook. Facebook.com/horror movie yearbook. Twitter's a good spot to reach us at HM Yearbook on Twitter. You can also shoot us an email. We haven't received an email in a while. Somebody give us a nice long email. Something that we can really just sink our teeth into. That'd be nice. We're horrormovieyearbook@gmail.com. So now that that's out of the way, let's talk about Facebook first. Pose the question, as always. What's your favorite horror movie from 2002, since that's the year we're covering on this episode? And we got some good responses. Let's start with David Steele, friend of the show.
Yeah.
Got to be either 28 Days Later or Cabin Fever. I won't argue with either one of those. Alex of the Midwest Podcast Network says, it's a tie between SwimFan and Fear.com. Haven't seen either of them, but they seem like the cream of the crop.
Well, he would love SwimFan.
I think he digs SwimFan.
Was SwimFan 2002?
Apparently. All
right.
Yeah.
I believe you.
I believe him.
I think it was.
Alex is the kind of guy who does his research, so.
Yeah.
Yeah. John Morrell of the Midwest Game Nerds Podcast said, do I have to pick just one? 28 Days Later and Cabin Fever are on my list. So is The Mothman Prophecies, Red Dragon, and The Ring. Pretty good. There's a bit of a conversation here. Alex comes back and says, Queen of the Damned is 2002 as well. And John goes, yeah, but that movie is awful. Alex said, I've never seen it, but I know you had the soundtrack. And he goes, the soundtrack is great. The movie sucks.
The soundtrack is great, if I recall.
Yeah, it was a weird like collaboration, because what they would do is they would take singers from kind of like nu metal bands at the time. So they had like Jonathan Davis and the guy from Linkin Park, Chester Bennington, and David something or other from Disturbed. They had them all come on and do songs on this album, but they all sang in a similar voice because they were all the voice of the character. Yeah. It's interesting. It's a weird concept album, but I dig it. Paul on Facebook says, man, this is a tough one. Ju-on, but it just barely beats Dog Soldiers and 28 Days Later. Yoop, who's a longtime listener, says, do Dog Soldiers, The Ring, or Eight-Legged Freaks? Yoop, we've got two of those three covered.
Eight-Legged Freaks is fun.
Yeah, it is.
I like it a lot.
Yep. And as Meatloaf said, two out of three ain't bad. My brother Zach said, The Ring has to take the cake here, considering how genuinely horrifying it is, even for me. Honorable mention is Queen of the Damned, if you count it. Not exactly scary, but I think it's great. Also honorable mention to Cube 2 Hypercube, because I'm weird and I love the Cube movies. A band of idiots trying to escape a giant Rubik's Cube death machine never gets old.
I have never seen Cube 2.
It's fun. Cube 2 is the weakest of the three, in my opinion.
Okay.
Yeah, Cube 0.
I guess I've never seen 3 either, then.
Cube 0. Yeah. It's
prequel. Cube 0. I've not seen it, but now I remember it. Okay
gotcha. Matt says, mine's definitely 28 Days Later. It was my introduction to Danny Boyle and got me very interested in zombie movies. I definitely owe that movie a lot. I think a lot of people feel that way, for sure. Your brother Greg said Eight-Legged Freaks. And
he does like Eight-Legged Freaks. I will vouch for that.
You'll vouch for that. I could never watch Eight-Legged Freaks, and I still haven't.
Despite not a fan?
They eat a Boston Terrier. It's just my favorite breed of dog. I can't handle it.
I can see that. Yeah.
Bum me out. I think they show it in the trailer, and I was like, nope, sorry. and then your dad, Mark Long, said Hellraiser, Hellseeker.
He's never seen that.
You sure?
Oh, there is no way.
There's no way. I like that, though.
Which one is Hellseeker, by the way?
I don't know.
Oh, no, we're looking it up right now.
That might have been Carrie Werher. We've talked about her before. I think it was her.
Ashley Lawrence. Oh, this is the Dean Winters one.
Yes, Dean Winters. Yeah. Yeah, he's the protagonist, but he plays like the world's worst human being.
And this is where, yeah, Kirstie Cotton comes back.
Yeah.
God, I do not remember this one.
It's not very good.
Directed by Rick Boda.
I marathoned the Hellraiser movies once, and you warned me not to.
Yeah.
But you kind of encouraged me to. I think you wanted to see what would happen to me.
Yeah.
I made it out the other side, but it took a while to recover, so. We, of course, as always, mentioned that it's on Friday. That was Fear.com Friday. I really apologize if I'm mispronouncing your name, but Ocho Vistas, at Magnatrex on Twitter, said you should check out my review on it. I will definitely make that happen. Mm-hmm. Always love a little Fear.com. So we mentioned that, of course, we're doing 2002 on Twitter as well. Phantom Tech, who is one of our greatest supporters in terms of feedback, said that Dog Soldiers is one of his favorite werewolf films ever.
I would agree with that.
Said he was also excited about the sequel called Fresh Meat, but have not heard anything in a while. I think that kind of died.
Yeah, Marshall throws that out every once in a while, too.
Yeah.
Still. He hasn't done anything in a while since Centurion.
TV.
TV. Yeah. He's done a lot of good TV, too.
Really, really solid stuff. He did some Hannibal, of course, Game of Thrones. He's done some of the best episodes on that.
Game of Thrones. There was another one he's doing right now.
The other one that died out was Burst, which I was upset by.
Yeah, Burst was cool, too. Neil Marshall can't get a movie made, it seems, lately.
Yeah, he was working with Sam Raimi on Burst, and didn't pan out.
Yeah.
So. That's okay. I love Neil Marshall. I want him to do another movie.
Oh, he's doing Westworld. Westworld. So I'm sure Alex and Nick, hosts of Westworld FM, can tell you all about his work on that.
Yeah, absolutely. Check it out. John Morrell had some, I think, some semi-corrections for us here.
thanks for putting this in.
Said Static X was on the Bride of Chucky soundtrack, but the song was Blood for Days.
Okay.
And it was White Zombie, not Rob Zombie, on there.
Yeah, that kind of made me mad that I screwed that up.
Yep, it was not Living Dead Girl, it was Thunderkiss 65. Mm-hmm. And he said, if Tim's favorite Eve 6 album is Horoscope, then we were probably meant to be best friends at some point. And then he wanted to mention that the Razer phone was named as such for being cutting edge in its design.
That seemed like an unnecessary correction. I'll just throw that out there.
Yeah.
But
come on, John.
We are friends, and that is my favorite album. Yes. Of E6 album. It was like my favorite high school album, too, which I'm sure we'll talk about as my graduating year is 2002. But it's like the only album that still plays in my car.
Nice.
Like, as far as CDs go.
That's awesome.
Because my CDs would just roll around.
Oh, my God. Just aimlessly floating around.
Yeah.
Oh, my God.
But somehow that made it through.
That's awesome. Yoop said, just watch The Invitation. Thanks for the tip.
Yeah.
That's awesome. I'm very happy we turned somebody on to that. I'm going to mispronounce this name, too, and I apologize, Yoop. Fellow Dutchman Mikkel, I think, Hoosman, was great. Liked the building of tension. I have to completely agree with that.
Okay.
Nick, our fellow Midwest Podcast Network cohort, says 2002 was a seminal year for him. Dead Heat between Dog Soldiers and 28 Days Later. Both wonderful choices, of course.
The newly engaged Nick, by the way.
Yes, congratulations to our Nick Blauvelt.
Yes, congratulations.
For not tying the knot yet, but for taking the first step in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah, big congrats.
You mentioned Bride of Chucky, I should.
Oh, yes.
The
Bride spirit. Of Blauvelt.
If only he'll play White Zombie.
Oh, my God. I really want Nick and his fiance to do a couple's costume of Chucky and Tiffany now.
Somebody has to have done a theme wedding of like the Bride of Chucky.
Someone's done it. Yeah. Reach out to
Maybe
us if you
Jennifer
know somebody.
Maybe Jennifer Tilly, from what I mean.
Maybe. Yeah, she seems pretty into it. Allison Jones on Twitter said that she listened to us, heard about us through Cinemajaw, who we're kind of working with a little. Little sponsorship there. Thank you again, Cinemajaw, for all your support and for putting it out there. And thank you, Allison, for listening. I'm glad you enjoyed it. That's awesome. Good to hear. I think that's pretty much everything. Nick mentioned that his soul is ready for this episode.
Okay. We'll try not to let him down.
Yeah, we're going to really try to live up to that. I hope we can. But please send feedback. We love to hear from you guys.
Perfect. All right. I've got nothing else. You got anything else? You want to jump in?
I think I'm good, man.
We're jumping in the time machine.
Are we going in?
Let's go.
All right.
I like how we laugh through the traveling through time.
Well, we know it's coming now.
We just giggle through it. Yeah, who cares? Yeah, we're seasoned vets.
Yeah.
Willie, we're back in 2002 now.
Whoa.
15 years ago.
This is weird.
Yeah, how old were you?
I was, 16.
16.
Yeah. I was drinking a lot of Mike's Hard Lemonade. I was drinking some Smirnoff Ice. what was the other? Sublime was my other.
Oh, Sublime?
Was my other drink of choice.
Yeah, I mean, at a certain age, like, people are into Sublime. Like,
yeah, I couldn't drink beer.
There's a certain age, yeah.
Couldn't drink beer at that age.
What Sublime album do you like better, 40 Ounce to Freedom or?
Oh, no, I was into the drink Sublime.
Oh, I'm sorry.
No, not the band. No. Never really listened to the band. I'm sure they're great. But I know Santeria, the song Santeria.
I thought you were talking about the band. Because I was really into Sublime in high school.
Oh, okay.
And then, like, I kind of try to listen to it now.
Yeah,
it's
rough.
It's, like, gouging my ears.
Okay, gotcha. Yeah. No. This is Sublime.
We just turned off all Sublime bands.
This is Sublime, the malt beverage, the malt liquor.
I've never had Sublime.
It doesn't exist anymore. But it was all the rage when you were 16.
Yeah, that's what you got.
Yeah,
so
it was.
You work with it. Yeah.
Man, I'd have two of those things, and I would think I was just.
A 40 ounce of freedom, you could say.
Yeah. So, I didn't. I think 16 was when I discovered alcohol.
Okay.
Which is a life changing event, I think.
Yeah.
I tried to. I think I was trying to mack on the ladies when I was 16. Didn't work out so great for me until a couple years later. So
right.
And it's arguable that it worked out then. Mm. But I'm married now.
I was
gonna
say it worked out.
So
yeah.
It worked out in the long run.
In the long run, yeah.
What else did I do when I was 16? Definitely listen to the new metal.
Macked on the ladies.
Macked on the ladies. Yeah. That's how hip I was. I probably said it like that too.
Yeah.
I would have been listening to the Queen of the Damned soundtrack at this point in time.
Good.
So there you have that.
Good.
That's about it. How about you, Tim? What were you up to? You were a senior in high school.
I graduated high school this
year. Yeah, you did.
Yeah. You want to show my age a little bit.
Were you macking?
Macking on the ladies?
Yeah. You're
no,
a senior.
I've got too much respect for the fairer sex. Mack on the ladies. I would talk to them.
Yes, converse with them.
Converse with them. Okay. Know their interests.
At 16, there was no conversation for me.
I've got a quiz later. Later on regarding my senior year,
and you
will realize that I was macking on no ladies
okay.
at this time.
I can't wait.
And part of the reason was I was listening to a lot of the Spider-Man soundtrack, because this is the year Spider-Man came out, and so did I.
That's
Chad
great.
Chad Kroger and Josie Scott.
Yeah.
It was
the guy
Josie
from
Wales.
Nickelback and the guy from...
Saliva.
Saliva.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then...
That song was so sick, though.
Yeah.
Oh. Sorry.
No, and then the worst version of the Spider-Man theme song ever done by Aerosmith.
There was a version done by Aerosmith?
Yeah, you should listen to it after this show.
For the movie?
Yeah.
Are you serious?
On the soundtrack. It's horrible.
Is it in the movie?
It might be over the end credits.
Holy shit.
Yeah, it might be over the end credits.
I had no idea.
Like after they play Hero.
It's incredible.
They play that, and then they play the old 60s version. No, I was graduating high school this year.
That's a big deal.
We'll get more into that later.
Yeah. We'll get into it.
I've made up a quiz about myself. If that's not the most
douchey
thing, right? Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that. You want to know what was going on in the world in 2002?
Yeah. Enough about us.
Let's start with the good stuff here.
Mm-hmm.
This was the year that one Mr. Michael Jackson dangled Prince Michael II off a balcony from a Berlin hotel room. This. Like, there are a lot of people that are just like, it's his baby. Like, first of all, the man has no strength at this point.
No, yeah, he wasn't exactly in the best physical shape.
Skeleton.
Yeah.
He's dangling this child over the balcony.
Like,
I'm not one. I don't want to sit here and tell you how to raise your child, but you should not do these.
No.
Things. Yeah.
That's not good.
And he had, like, the blanket over his head, too.
Yeah, he had a hard time lifting him back up, from what I remember.
Yeah.
It looked a little touch and go there for a second.
He was giggling like a maniac the entire time.
Yeah, and then what was his thing? He's like, I got caught up in the moment. What? Huh?
Got caught up in the moment. People were just like, Michael, we have to see the baby. So I said, here, let me dangle it from a hotel room.
We tossed the baby to you.
Hundreds of feet above the ground. Yeah.
What a maniac.
So that was good. He was far gone at this point.
Yeah, it was bad.
Maybe we shouldn't make fun of him, but hey.
I mean, it is what it is.
I think the baby's doing all right.
Yeah, Prince, I think so.
All right.
Yeah.
Winona Ryder was sentenced to 3 years probation, 480 hours of community service, $3,700 in fines, some restitution, in order to attend psychological and drug counseling after being found guilty of stealing from Saks Fifth Avenue.
I mean,
that being kind of a scandal.
Yeah, it was weirdly like a big deal, and I was like, why does anybody care?
I don't really care.
Okay. Like
a rich person stealing from Saks Fifth Avenue.
I mean, clearly this is a
try to find a bigger Saks.
I think Winona can probably could probably afford stuff there. Probably. Yeah. I think she was doing it because she probably it was a thrill.
It was like her thing, wasn't it? She was
a kleptomania. Yeah.
She's back now.
Yeah, she's all right.
She's on
Stranger Things is going well for her. Did you see her making all the faces at the awards?
I did. I didn't see why. Well, I did see why because the guy who gave me the speech was a maniac.
Yeah.
He's kind of funny, but he's crazy.
Yeah, and she is like, what?
George Bush, W. Bush was the president. He signed legislation creating the Department of Homeland Security.
Yeah.
This year. Remember they had the threat level?
Threat level, yeah, orange and stuff.
Which do we use that? We don't use that.
I don't think it's a thing anymore, right? No. It was always a threat level orange. It never really moved.
That was not. I mean, I understand creating the department and everything, but the threat level thing was like the Smokey's forest fire thing was a bit.
Well, I think
you should always be kind of on alert.
Sure. And yeah. I think it was just good for George.
Yeah.
To have like a color coded system. That he could use.
That's fair.
Yeah. And who can blame him?
Yeah, if it's easier for he's in charge of the country. If it's easier for him, then by all means, create that and
go nuts. I say get a little more creative than the color codes, but
right.
But you know,
yeah, and maybe switch it up every once in a while.
Yeah.
Snipers. Remember the DC Sniper?
I do.
That was this year. John Allen Muhammad and John Lee Malvo. They made a movie about that, didn't they?
Yeah. It's oh god.
It was like a.
It's the model of the car. That's the title of the movie is the model of the car.
Oh, okay.
I don't remember what it is. I
thought there was one called DC Sniper that we used to have in the video.
I think that's a schlocky direct-to-video one. There was one that actually like was up for some awards and stuff.
I don't know why I put this out there, but I don't care. Tom Green won 5 Razzies for Freddy Got Fingered in 2002. He showed up in a white Cadillac, rolled out his own red carpet, and got dragged off the stage because he wouldn't stop playing a harmonica.
That's awesome.
Yeah. I don't really have any sort of opinion on the Razzies. I think they're kind of dumb.
Yeah, I don't care.
But anybody who wants to show up and then play the harmonica just to troll them is fine with me.
Yeah, I like Tom Green.
Freddy Got Fingered, I saw it. I don't remember it. Some people really like it.
I don't either. I liked him in Road Trip.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Good in small doses for me.
Yeah, sure.
President Bush's first State of the Union address. Oh, that's right, because this would have been that year. This was the Axis of Evil speech. I remember that. Iraq and North Korea labeled him the Axis of Evil.
Yeah, and most of what W would do for the next few years was a response, understandably so, to 9/11.
Yes, yeah, because we are post 9/11 this year. Yep. So this is our first, close vicinity.
Yeah.
Year, I think, as far as 9/11 goes. Pennsylvania miners rescued after spending 77 hours in dark flooded mine shaft. I forgot about that. Now I remember it.
Yeah, that was a big deal. Was that in Chile?
Pennsylvania.
Oh, that was Pennsylvania.
The Chilean
there was
miner.
A Chilean one later. Yep. Yeah.
Rosie O'Donnell announced that she was gay.
Okay.
This year. I always thought that was before. I think everybody kind of knew.
Everybody knew. Yeah. I don't think it was a big deal.
Boston Archbishop Bernard Law resigns as a result of the Catholic Church's sexual abuse scandals and cover-up of priest child molestation.
Yes.
Yep. And then, horror-related, because I want to talk a little bit about it, The Thing video game was released in 2002. It is considered the canonical sequel to the 1982 film and explains what happens to Childs and McCready.
I've played The Thing video game. I was a fan.
Yeah.
I would love to see them... have you seen any footage from Until Dawn, which is horror related, so we can talk about it?
Yeah.
Very cool game. You kind of jump into various characters as they try to survive this kind of horrifying situation.
Is Until Dawn the one with Ellen Page?
No, this is the one with Hayden Panettiere.
Okay.
Yeah. And a couple of it has Agent Banana Republic from Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. in it.
Okay.
Yep. One of your favorites, Brett Dalton. Brett Dalton's his actual name. And then it has the lead, Rami Malek from Mr. Robot.
Oh, the guy with the sunken eyes.
Yeah. He looks kind of tired all the time.
Yeah.
It's an excellent game.
I think a robot would look fresher.
Yeah, it might. Yeah.
Stupid joke.
It's a. I let it go. it's an excellent game, and if you're a fan of horror, it's definitely worth playing. But I would love to see something along those lines done with the Thing property, where you have your choices as certain characters affect if other characters become the Thing.
Yeah.
And you have different endings or different outcomes based on your.
Well, Carpenter got super into games.
Yeah. And I think he had something to do with the Thing. I think he was at least consulted on it.
Yes. Yeah. I remember him having quite a bit to do with it, if I recall.
Yeah,
I thought the game was fun.
I had fun with it.
I kind of wanted to do more games like that. But
It'd be neat. Yeah. If they could tap Carpenter to... I think he would get excited to do What's weird is most of his film universes are ripe for video games.
Yeah,
yeah. Like Big Trouble in Little China, you can make a game with that for sure. They Live, I'd play the hell of a
They Live would be a blast.
Like a cool open world New York.
Oh
where,
my God.
Yeah, it'd be awesome.
Get on that. Yeah.
Escape from New York would make a great game. I mean, there's plenty. Like his universes would
Memoirs
work well.
Memoirs of Invisible Man.
Of course. Yep, yeah, absolutely. Star in the Man. Mouth of Madness. actually, that'd be kind of sweet. Like a horror game. Where yeah. Oh, man. Now I want that. Anyway, so no, I enjoyed the game. Yeah.
All right. Oh, the Red Wings won the Stanley Cup this year. I'll throw that out there.
Heck yeah.
They beat Get Carolina 4-1. Top 10 movies. We'll run through these real quick.
Sure.
At the box. This is according to BoxOfficeMojo.com.
Yes.
Trusted site. Chicago at number 10. Ice Age at number 9. Men in Black 2 at number 8. Men in Black 2 is funny because Johnny Knoxville just disappears at one point.
Like, yeah, I like Men in Black 2 because it's like 76 minutes long.
Gold Member, Austin Powers, number 7. 6, Signs. Is that? Do we count that as horror? I always kind of lumped it as science fiction.
Yeah, it's on the cusp, yeah.
It's on the cusp. Yeah. All of his movies are kind of they're weird.
It's close enough.
My Big Fat Greek Wedding, number 5. Harry Potter and the Chamber of Secrets. Part 2, the second one. Number 4. Wow. Number 3, Star Wars Episode 2, Attack of the Clones.
Oh, my God.
Yep. 2 movies beat it. Do you know what they are?
No. Spider-Man?
Spider-Man, number 1. Number 2 came out in the fall. I'll give you that hint.
Oh,
also
man.
In a series of movies.
2002. Man, was it one of the Blades? No, the Blades.
Oh, my God, I wish.
Those wouldn't have made that much money. What was it?
It was the Two Towers, Lord of the Rings.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, okay. Yep.
All right, top 10 songs. Number 1, How You Remind Me by Nickelback.
Oh, boy. Yep. This is the year of the Nickelback.
Yeah, I think so. Number 2, oh, no, I lost my spot. Number 2, Foolish by Ashanti. I don't really know that one.
Nope.
Number 3, Hot in Here by Nelly. I know that one.
That's a good one.
Yeah. Number 4 is Dilemma by Nelly, featuring Kelly Rowland.
Wow, back-to-back back Nelly.
Yeah. Number 5, Wherever You Will Go by The Calling. I cannot stand that song.
I don't remember that song.
No.
It's okay.
1,000 Miles by Vanessa Carlton, number 6. In the End, Linkin Park, number 7. What's Love, Fat Joe versus Ashanti.
Versus Ashanti?
No, I said that.
That'd be great.
Featuring Ashanti. What's yeah. You Got It Bad by Usher, number 9. And Blur,
You Got It Bad's really good.
Yeah. Hey, Usher, there ain't no problem with Usher. And then Blurry by Puddle of Mud at number 10. Yeah.
I accidentally saw Puddle of Mud live once.
My brother did too.
I didn't know they were going to be there.
My brother's story is really funny, and I'm going to tell it right now.
Yeah.
He was on spring break, and they were drinking, and apparently the Puddle of Mud lead singer was drinking too, because like they were just both hammered, and like they made eye contact, and the Puddle of Mud guy like gave him like a
finger gun. They understood each other in that moment.
Yeah,
that's great. My story is that what was their big song, Puddle of Mud?
Other than Blurry,
She Hates Me.
Oh my God!
Yeah, no. I can't. I don't like that sound to begin with.
Yeah.
They went on stage for their final song, which was that song, and proceeded to play a weird, like 13 to 15 minute like version of it, and it was horrible. It was like one of the worst experiences I've ever had.
That's right. No, you told me
at a concert. Like they'd bring it down, like
yeah,
and then they'd bring it back up, and then they bring it back down again. It was like this is not an epic. Like fucking stop. You think this is Stairway to Heaven? Like, cut it the... it was horrible.
Yeah.
It was a bummer. I was drunk, so...
Apparently, that's how you go to Puddle of Mud shows.
That's the only way to do it.
Yeah. So, Puddle of Mud fans, Sublime fans, I'm sorry.
Yeah, sorry, guys.
Insulted your
No.
Taste.
If you like them, you like them. I'm
no,
not gonna...
No, music, very subjective.
I'm not gonna rag on somebody for liking something. I'll rag on the band, though.
No, we just admitted to liking, like, 2 or 3 Nelly songs.
Of course.
Yeah.
I'm like, ashamed.
Like both those things, though. So. all right, Willie. 2002, the year in horror. Apparently, you know what, though, we're of the age where a lot of people, like, people know that horror movies of 2002. Because I was looking at this. We got the 3 movies we're going to talk about today. We're going to talk about The Ring first.
Oh, wow, okay.
But other than the 3 movies, because we got The Ring, we got Dog Soldiers, and we got 28 Days Later.
Okay.
And other than that, though, I don't think it's that deep of a bench. Because we got Ghost Ship. Yeah, 8-Legged Freaks, Cabin Fever, May. the Mothman Prophecies, fear.com.
There's a small handful, I think, that stand out.
We're in a weird spot in horror at this time.
Yeah, we're leaving the teen slasher stuff we did on our last episode.
Yep.
That's kind of died out at this point, but we haven't found our footing yet in terms of that the splat pack hasn't arrived yet.
Right.
You know, like your Alexandra Ahas and your Rob Zombies and
Eli Roth.
They haven't really come in.
Eli
showed up on the scene this year, but he really, Hostel was the one that really, I think, kind of, you know, put him on the map. Cabin Fever was like his first volley, and then Hostel kind of like people lost their minds. So we hadn't hit that point yet. So yeah, it's a transitional period.
Yeah. So yeah, we're kind of in that point. We're gonna talk about The Ring a little bit. 2002. Little synopsis. The journalist must investigate a mysterious videotape which seems to cause the death of anyone in a week of viewing it.
What a plot.
Right?
What a premise.
It's a great premise. It was probably a greater premise in 1998 or 95 when the TV version and the novel and stuff came out.
Sure.
When VHS were still a thing.
Still a thing, yeah.
Although I think the VHS were still around 2002 because I remember, I think I watched Signs on VHS.
Hey, I'm just going to throw it out there. I worked at a video store starting in 2004, and I worked there, I would say, by 2006, the tapes were gone. But they were still producing, like, we had, like, VHS copies of 40-Year-Old Virgin and stuff, which is crazy. But, so, yeah, they existed.
I remember that being the thing, because, yeah, if the video store didn't have it on DVD, I would get it on VHS.
Yeah.
Yep. Fair enough. Willie, The Ring.
Yeah.
Talk to me about it.
So I saw The Ring in the theater, and I remember, with the exception of, like, The Sixth Sense, ghost stuff wasn't all that hot, and I remember, I was never a huge fan of supernatural horror growing up. I have become more appreciative of it now. I think we have some really quality stuff coming out from that, you know, in that genre, but at the time, I remember seeing a handful of ones, when I was younger, you know, The Haunting, and The Changeling was one that stuck out to me as a kid. But in general, I wasn't nuts about him. My mom was a huge fan. Like, if my mom watches a movie, it's usually like a supernatural horror movie. That's her genre, for sure. And so this is one of three movies I remember going to see with my mom in the theater. My dad took me to all the movies, but my mom went. She's like, I want to see The Ring.
Oh, really?
And I'm like, oh, shit.
That's cool.
Mom, you're hardcore. And so we went and saw it, and it scared the hell out of me. Like, it freaked me out. I remember going home that night and legitimately, I think, actually, if I remember right, my entire family that went, I don't think my little brother went because he was a bit young for it, but my family, if I remember right, like, stayed up and watched, like, something funny because we were all a little bit, like, no one was admitting that they were freaked out, but we all were internally.
Yeah.
It's like that time when, like, that really kind of like a guilty pleasure song comes on the radio, but no one turns it off.
Maybe like a Nelly song?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like Hot in Here comes on. No one's going to turn it off.
No.
We're not going to say you like it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, no, it had an impact on me. It genuinely freaked me out. And I think it's because it's one of those horror movies where it's just such a simple concept. It's such a cool little idea that you watch a tape, you get a phone call, and you're done. Like it's so simple. It's the most recent example of kind of a plot like that I can think of is like in It Follows.
Yeah.
It's such a simple premise, but so you put yourself in the shoes of somebody. Like, I could see myself, you know, going up with my buddies to a cabin up in northern Michigan and watching this tape because I dare you to watch this tape. I hear it. And then, like, oh, shit, we're going to die.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, I don't know. You buy it. And I was talking to you earlier today a little bit about this, but what's interesting to me is that this movie, if it had been made 4 years previous, so in 98, the last year we covered, it would have been the opening segment of the movie.
Drawn out.
It would have been about the group of teenagers that get together at a party and watch it, and then...
Probably would have been longer still, too.
Get killed off, yeah, and then get killed off one by one. That would be the... It'd be essentially like a slasher with a ghost.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm glad that isn't what this is. I think that would have been fun, but I think the reason why this one sticks with people is because it's a very adult horror movie. It's accessible to teenagers. It's accessible to younger people. I mean, I watched it at 16 and understood what was going on and got it and connected with it enough. But I think what's cool about it is that it is about a grown-ass woman who's got a kid and is it ex-husband or ex...
At least
baby's daddy.
Baby's daddy, yeah.
Yep. And there's an adult involved, and she's just trying to do whatever it takes to get herself out of this horrible situation. And she uses her brains and she uses her resources. And sometimes that can be boring.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a portion of this movie in the middle that does drag for me. I will admit to nodding off a little bit watching it. At first, I mean, I went back and watched, you know, rewound to where I was and watched the whole thing. But there, when we start to get into the where she's investigating on the island, and we're digging a little bit more into the, like, Brian Cox shows up, and I fell asleep just before Brian Cox showed up because you can't fall asleep once he shows up.
No, he'll yell at you.
Yeah, he'd be really mad. Anyway, so there is a middle portion that drags, but you know what still works is the visuals of just the the look of the film and the visuals that they, the times when they choose to be straight up horror, when they go full bore, especially towards the end, it's really still very creepy. Mm-hmm. That image of Samara crawling out of the TV is iconic. That is an iconic image in horror. And there's this cool thing that I noticed this time that I'm not sure I noticed in previous viewings. When she comes out of the screen, she's got the VHS crackle and fizzle. Did you notice that?
Yes.
It's so fucking cool.
Yeah. He does a lot of little touches like that. Those
whoever made that design choice is a genius. I love it. And I do enjoy this movie quite a bit. And I think that I think it ages fine. I think it's a pretty timeless horror movie. I mean, yeah, they're watching VHS tapes, but it's not like they're running around. You know, like this seems like kind of a weird like artifact. You know what I mean? So like I still.
Yeah.
I still buy it.
Yeah, VHS tape itself almost even then kind of came off.
It's a relic.
Like a relic. It's like a ghost itself.
It makes it creepier.
Yeah.
If it was like a DVD, it wouldn't be as scary for some strange reason.
Right.
You know? And then I think there's a weird synonymous thing with that people kind of, I think, associate VHS tapes with watching something you shouldn't be watching.
Yes, because you can record them on your own, basically.
You can record them on your own.
And you pass them around. You can do like black market tape trading.
Yep. And then, I mean, you know, that's, you know, I think that's people get the impression of like a, because this Ring film that you watch, the film within the film, it almost feels like a snuff movie.
Well, that's what I was going to say. It almost feels like, because even today there are YouTube videos that people dare other people to watch.
Yeah.
And film reactions of it and stuff like that. So,
yeah.
I mean, it still almost works on that level of kind of like an urban legend or just like a dare to watch, like dare you to watch this.
Yeah. And I find it interesting. I mean, this movie, you know, was made previously, you said in what, 95?
Yeah, I don't remember when the novel came out. There's a made-for-TV movie version that I just saw recently in 1995 that seems to be more in line with the novel. From what I remember of it, it's kind of like a Skinamax, kind of like a softcore.
Oh, wow.
It's a lot.
That's different.
It's a lot skeezier.
Okay.
Than the other one. Because I've seen the 98 version, but I didn't see that, the original Japanese version. I didn't see that until like college.
Okay.
And I haven't watched it since. Gotcha. I was going to go through and watch all the Ring movies because the Ring movies have this weird thing where they, like, the Japanese ones split off into two separate
chronologies. Yeah.
So, I hadn't seen the original before I saw this one. I was still in high school at the time. And,
okay.
What's
the original called? Is it Ringu?
Ringu.
Okay.
Yeah. Yep.
And the 98 version is it
the 98 version is Ringu. The 95 version is like Ringu, and it's got some subtitle to it. So.
Okay. It gets very confusing because there's also Spiral is another.
Yes. Yeah. I think that's where it splits off.
So weird.
Yeah. Because I was going to watch all of the Ring movies and the Grudge movies before, and I watched all the Grudge movies, and then I got through the first Ring movie, and I forgot to do the rest of them.
And the Grudge movies can be confusing, too.
Yeah, the Grudge movies are really funny.
Yeah.
When it comes to that. Less confusing, though, figuring out which ones you should watch. That's the thing with the Ring movies is you're like, well, which one do I watch? Like, which choose my own adventure?
Which chronology?
Probably in the same boat as you when it comes to this movie. Mm. I think I've always kind of just liked it. Never really loved it.
Sure.
The first 30 minutes are awesome. The first act of this movie is great.
Oh, it's fantastic.
Up until I think she watches like the video, maybe.
She gets to that cabin in the woods. And
yeah, that's where I start to. It's the investigation stuff that drags for me.
It does.
Yeah. It's just the. It's not. It's not really that interesting. She doesn't. The only interesting character she really meets on the entire investigation is Brian Cox. To me, everybody else is kind of blech.
And he's not around a long time.
No, he's only in it for like 3 minutes. He's great.
Yeah.
But that first 30 minutes, fantastic. The opening kill. It's fun in a cheesy kind of horror movie kind of way, but it makes me laugh. Why are they so rotted?
I don't know.
Their corpses are like rotted out.
I kind of love it though, because the cool thing about it is you only see like a flash of it,
right?
Which is so slick, like because you know a lot of horror movies I think would just like linger on the corpse. There's something creepier about just seeing the flash, because what later on when was it Martin Henderson? Is that the
Torque? Yes.
Yeah. The later on when his character is killed by Samara, you don't see him. You just see the back of his head in the chair, and you see Naomi Watts' reaction where she's like, and this is a woman who's pretty strong. I mean, she's a pretty strong character. She's like on a mission this whole time, and you see her like scream like hysterically, like kind of like, you know, like a generic horror movie type, you know, like you expect from a horror movie.
Yeah.
So you see this strong character kind of break for a second, and it's totally understandable. But it almost throws you, like, you're like, oh, shit, that must be really bad. Like, whatever she saw is bad. And then they show you a brief flash of it later, and you're like, whoa, his face is, like, folding in on it. How did that happen?
Yeah.
I don't get it. But.
Yeah. There's a line in the movie that, like, one of the cops says, or, like, one of the parents say after it, where they talk about their kids, like, dying because it, like, can't be, like, it just seemed weird that they rotted away and were really mummified corpses, and they're like, I don't know what happened.
The doctors don't have an explanation for this.
Ghostly had a heart attack. the video is really funny. And I forgot they show the video.
Yeah.
Because if I recall in the Japanese version, maybe they don't.
They just show you somebody watching.
It's just kind of built up as some like mythic thing. And like the ring... The 2002 version shows the video, and I forgot about that.
In its entirety.
Yeah, it's fun. It's like a student art house, like trying to gross out film, like some like gothy college
some
kids got together. Yeah, with some deep meaning, got together and shot some sort of Salvador Dali film.
This is about the gentrification.
And but it's so funny, and it's kind of gross. It's kind of
the maggots always freak me out.
Maggots are gross.
I don't like maggots.
Yeah,
and no one does. But
yeah. So I looked at that. I forgot about that. It's really stylish.
Yeah.
It's definitely the most polished of the movies. I don't want to say that about 28 Days Later though, because it's a purposeful choice.
It's
28 Days
yes,
Later.
It is purposefully unpolished. Whereas Dog Soldiers, I think, is just a matter of
it's low budget. Yeah. This is slick as hell.
Yeah.
Gore Verbinski's problem has never been visuals. He's always
some of that stuff in that first Pirates movie is like breathtaking stuff too. So
weird with him. My problem is always Lone Ranger. Even like it's bloat with him. He doesn't. It just seems like he doesn't know when to cut stuff. And I could probably lob that at this movie too, because you get 20 minutes out of this, be better.
You could.
But it's weirdly faster paced than the original, and the original is shorter. Because I remember the original's got that Japanese pacing though, that is kind of different. Torque, Martin Henderson, star of Torque. He's fine. He plays kind of a bland.
Yeah. He's very much a Stephen King TV movie protagonist.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Which I think is kind of all he's supposed to be.
Yeah, it's fine.
Brian Cox shows up, is amazing.
He's awesome.
Naomi Watts is Naomi Watts. I've never really, other than Tank Girl, of course, and Mulholland Drive, Naomi Watts. I mean, she's nice. Her character's decent. There's some interesting stuff when it comes to the interesting feminism reading from this kind of applies more to Samara than actually.
Oh, for sure.
I mean, she's a decent character in that she's like a working woman who's doing her job and investigating. Like, it's cool. She's not
and doing what she has to do to protect her kid.
Her kid. The kid is kind of annoying, but
the kid's a bit of a problem for me because there were so many movies around this time period where you'd have generic creepy kid with like sunken in eyes who's like just staring off into space.
Yeah, get that. Maybe she does need a little bit of help. I'm just offering parenting advice to Michael Jackson and Naomi Watts' character. That's right. I mean, let him have some rest.
Yeah, he looks like he hasn't slept in years. And that's before all this starts. Yeah. So that was a bit of a problem. I think that started because of The Sixth Sense. I think people took like the qualities from Haley Joel Osment that weren't the more interesting qualities.
This is very much influenced by The Sixth Sense in a lot of ways.
Yeah, for sure.
No, I like it. It's fine to good for me. Not my favorite of the movies we watched tonight. Came in the 2001. Talk a little bit about this, because this kind of kicked off that J-horror remake boom of the 2000s, because you had stuff like The Grudge and Pulse, Shudder, Dark Water, One Missed Call, The Eye.
Mm-hmm.
why do you think this happened? And do you like any of those movies?
I like this one, and I like parts of The Grudge. And parts of Pulse, actually.
Yeah. We were talking a little
admittedly,
bit about Pulse.
The rest of it's not great. Okay, I think I should... this is the reason why J-Horror showed up on the scene, in my opinion, is just a year before The Ring, which kicked off this whole thing, mm-hmm. we witnessed something like more horrifying than any horror movie. And
right.
I don't want to get too deep or anything.
No,
things.
I want to talk about it too.
But
yeah.
it was, you know, we watched the death of way too many people
yeah.
in a senseless act of violence.
A lot of us watched it live in school.
I can say, like, that the first plane, I didn't see. I don't think they weren't filming it. So most
right.
people didn't see. That second one, though, I remember, like, I literally watched the moment that people died. Like,
yeah.
And that messed me up a little
right.
bit. I'd never seen something like that. And then after that, we started to see more footage from overseas in Iraq and Afghanistan, and you'd hear stories about the stuff going on there, and we had all these like horrible like beheading videos hitting the internet and stuff like that not
yeah.
long after
yeah.
journalists American journalists being beheaded and stuff, really horrible stuff. And I actually think that kind of ties into the VHS angle of this. It's like the unwatchable thing that can't, you know,
mm-hmm.
that will mess your life up. I mean obviously the idea of The Ring precedes 9/11. But I think that might be a reason why this particular movie came out at the time, is because it's almost a response to like seeing something that you can't unsee. It
right.
affects, I mean, it doesn't kill you, but it affects your life. Anyway, but my big thing for the J-horror is I think that when as a culture in America experiencing that horrifying event, I think that you need to find something else, something new, something different than what you've seen before in order to scare audiences again. Because we've lived through worse.
Yeah.
And so I think that's where we started drawing from this particular well, which in this case obviously would be J-horror. And I think it made sense. We hadn't really stolen from Japan in terms of horror previous to this.
Right.
You know what I mean? Other, I think we'd taken some elements of, certainly Brian De Palma has some giallo elements to some of his early stuff. So I think we had taken some from the Italian horror
yeah.
boom. But Japan was new. It was new territory. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that studios realized that Americans needed something new to be scared of. The old hat wasn't working. And I think one of the cool things about, last thing I want to say about it is, everybody tends to complain, horror fans tend to complain, and I get it, about those periods of anywhere from 3 to 5 years in between horror cycles. And this, as we said, is one of those periods. There is no cycle at this point.
No. We're on the cusp of it.
We're discovering one.
Yeah.
But what I love about those, and what I think is underrated about those years or those few little periods of time, is that is when you find studios taking risks
mm-hmm.
and taking chances, because they want to be the first to find whatever that next cycle is going to be. And that's, I don't think we would have films like The Ring, which, like I said, supernatural horror was not a big deal at this point. Other than The Sixth Sense coming out, it wasn't. You didn't see a lot of those. I think we wouldn't see things like 28 Days Later. The zombie movie was totally passé at this point. And I don't think we would see Dog Soldiers either, for that matter.
Right.
Werewolf movies weren't exactly, you know. So I think people are trying to try different, you know, either drawing going back to the well of certain ideas, or pulling from things that we hadn't pulled from before. So anyway, that was very long-winded. But
no, I agreed. I kind of agree with every word of it. Yeah. You know, the only other thing, yeah. We're an American-based podcast, I'm sure
yeah.
you can tell.
Yeah.
9/11 was a big thing around that time, and I remember a lot of people saying, like, how are we going to get scared again? How are we going to laugh again? Was the other one that was
mm-hmm.
big around that time.
Sure.
And yeah, you're right. Pulling from a different culture that maybe you're not familiar with
mm-hmm.
is, I think, a way that studios did that. And the other thing I think people, because we are about to get into, is there another word for torture porn that we've come up with for a lot of the movies?
I don't know.
It's kind of the accepted term, right?
Yeah.
For stuff like Hostel and Saw.
Yeah.
So we're kind of getting into that, but with the J-horror movies and the Hostel movies, what everybody kind of forgets about the Hostel movies, what was scary about it was the American going over into kind of the unknown place.
Sure.
And being
fear
treated
of foreigners.
As an American. yeah, and that's kind of how The Grudge was too, if I recall, wasn't it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. More so
yeah.
than The Ring. Yeah,
dealing
yeah.
with a different culture and different customs and all that stuff. So I think that played a lot into it. The other only other thing I wanted to touch on, and we kind of touched on about it in our 99 episode when we talked about Audition, is obviously J-horror was ripe because they had just gone through a boom over there around that time. But the world is getting a lot smaller, too, because the internet is starting to hit. And studios and people have had a lot more access to these Japanese horror films. Yeah. So I think it's a logical next step for the American people to go, like, well, let's make that.
Yeah.
I mean, they're successful over there. So yeah, I think that has a lot to do with it. And I think it's interesting because the other two movies we were talking about today are foreign. I mean, 28 Days Later is a British movie. I think Dog Soldiers.
Dog Soldiers is yeah. I
don't know where they filmed it.
I think they shot it in England.
Okay.
I think it's standing in for Scotland.
Okay.
Because it takes place in Scotland.
Yeah.
But Neil Marshall's English.
I always thought he was Australian.
I always thought he was Scottish. So shows how ignorant we are.
What's really stupid about me though, thinking he's Australian, is I went to a Comic-Con where he gave like a panel.
Oh well.
And I watched him.
That's awesome.
And he seemed really hungover.
Oh, he might have been. Yeah. I always thought he was Scottish because Dog Soldiers takes place in Scotland and The Descent, they're all Scottish.
They're all Scottish, yeah.
Yeah. So I was like, oh, he's Scottish.
Yeah.
He's not.
I guess I always thought he was Australian because Doomsday always came across like Mad Max.
Yeah. Sure. You have your reasons. I get that.
So, no, the only other thing I wanted to touch on is I found a... Where did I find this? Oh, I got to give credit. It's called like... There's a website called... Oh, bitchflix.com.
Oh.
Which is like a funny name for a website. But it's kind of... They do feminism like readings of like movies and stuff.
Oh, cool.
But I never thought of this and I wanted to mention it because I think it's an interesting reading on it. But Samara is kind of like a feminist stand-in. Because she says in the movie, Rachel... Naomi Watts' character says, like, all she wants to do is be heard.
Mm-hmm.
And the whole movie is pretty much about suppressing her story.
Yeah.
Yeah, and kind of telling the story. And Brian Cox is telling the story for her. Everybody's kind of telling her story, but she's not.
Right.
And it ties into the Rachel character as well, because, I mean, she's a storyteller at herself.
Absolutely.
So it's kind of, in a way, it's almost, it plays, it's a cool reading, and I give him credit for it, and I was found it while I was kind of, just kind of clicking through research, but, I mean, it's just, it kind of talks about the danger of suppressing
that's kind of cool
stories, and yeah. I thought it was a really neat reading on it, so I wanted to bring that up before.
Yeah, that's neat. I like that.
You got anything else?
No, I'm good. I think it's worth a revisit. I do.
Yeah.
Be prepared to be, like I said, to be fair, it can drag a little in the middle, but I think it's worth a watch for sure.
Me too.
Yeah.
Yeah, you seen the new one?
I have not. It didn't get great reviews.
Yeah.
Like, really bad.
I'm going to video.
I'll watch it when it comes out on video. Yeah. Oh, I think the biggest disappointment coming out of that for me personally is that it didn't do well box office wise, and now it's turning everybody apparently off of making horror movies.
Yeah.
So I'm not sure why.
Which is stupid because you look at the top 10 right now; it's crammed with horror movies.
I know. I'm not sure why studios are basing decisions off of the performance of a sequel to a movie that wasn't well received, Ring 2.
Yeah.
That came out like 10 years ago.
Yeah.
I don't know how that's the like. That's,
nobody was clamoring for another Ring.
That's the reason. That's what we should be looking at. Look at fucking Split.
Yeah, Split.
The thing crushed it at the box office.
Yeah.
Why? I don't know.
I'm interested. I hope Get Out does well, too. I hope Get Out does well for a couple of reasons.
Yes. Yeah. Absolutely.
All right, Willie. I'm going to give you a quiz.
Uh-oh.
I'm going to give you a quick quiz about my senior year in high school.
I'm excited.
Yeah. Yes, you all should be. This is why you tune in.
Yeah, this is
to
the,
do a horror
this
movie
is the
podcast.
Reason.
We like to mix it up a little.
Absolutely.
Once in a while. If you're new to the show, maybe. Maybe you found us through Cinema Jaw.
Yeah.
Maybe just found us.
Yeah, he just found us.
Side of the road.
We're around.
All right. Quick 5 question. It was multiple choice.
Oh, boy.
So this way it's a little easier.
Thank you.
We had open lunch. And I could leave campus.
Yeah, us too.
In high school.
Yeah.
As long as you were like a junior or senior.
God, could we do it at any time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I think so.
So you had to be a junior or senior. I think maybe it had to do with being of age to drive.
Yeah.
But Burger King was my go-to lunch.
Yeah.
And now I'm going to ask you a question. This was my go-to lunch. A, 2 rodeo burgers. B, a Whopper meal. C, a double stack and 5-piece chicken strip.
You know, I'm going to go with, I think you like to go rodeo.
2 rodeo burgers.
You know what's amazing?
I
swear to God, this is true. My meal of choice for open lunch was Burger King.
Yeah.
and my food of choice was the rodeo burger.
I fucking love the rodeo burger.
Dude, so good.
They got rid of it, right? It's not around anymore.
No, it's around.
One time, friend of the show, Joe, and I were at lunch one time, and they're like, and I would just get two rodeo burgers. They're like, Tim, you're going to get two rodeo burgers?
Yeah, a dollar a piece.
I'm like, no, I think I got enough for a value meal today. And we got up there, and like, I was looking at the value meal, and they're finally like, Tim, what do you want? And I just like freaked out. Went, I just want two rodeo burgers.
Yep. Yeah, I don't want anything else. I would occasionally get the original chicken with cheese.
Yeah.
That was a nice combo.
Uh-huh.
But usually two rodeo burgers and a Sprite. That was where I was at.
All right, question number two. My mom has never forgiven me for not attending this. Homecoming, graduation, or senior prom?
I'll go prom.
Yeah, I didn't go to prom.
Okay.
Which plays out of the back of the ladies.
I did go to prom my senior
year.
Did you? Yeah.
Nice.
Yeah. I had a lovely lovely girlfriend my senior year of high school.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know how it happened, but it happened. I went to prom. It was awesome.
Good for you.
The food wasn't very good.
I wouldn't know. And neither would my mom.
It wasn't very good.
She still holds it against me.
You didn't miss much, honestly.
I think I went out and hung out with some friends after it.
Yeah, yeah. We had one of our friends' older brothers get a hotel room for us. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the girls didn't come back to the hotel with us. So it was just the guys. And we drank a lot of Sublimes. And then we strolled to the White Castle on the corner. And we ate, like, a Crave case.
Yeah.
And, like, there were a couple extra. And I remember leaving that morning. And there was a single White Castle cheeseburger slider sticking to the mirror of the...
See, now I've almost thought, as an adult, to take my girlfriend Amy... to, like, we were going to find a prom and kind of crash it.
You totally could.
And, like, do the whole thing for my mom. Luckily, I have a brother who went to prom. And so she did not miss out on, like, the picture taking and stuff. And it was a very fun time. But I thought about getting dressed up. And, like, getting all the pictures taken and then just showing up at the prom.
Oh, my God.
And then dancing.
Yeah, if security wasn't so probably tight on those things now, you probably could.
Yeah, it'd be a bad idea. I think my mom would love it, though.
Yeah.
All right, question number three. Senior all-night party. We had a senior all-night party at the Sportsplex.
Okay.
And then later on, because it was a whole thing, you stayed up all night, we went to the Gaylord Cinema. What movie did we see at the Gaylord Cinema? A, Bad Company. B, Attack of the Clones. C, Spider-Man.
I'm going to go Bad Company.
You were 3 for 3 right now.
Am I?
Yeah. Yep. Bad Company starring Chris Rock and Anthony Hopkins.
That was like a June release.
It was awful.
Yeah, it's not good.
It kept me awake, though, because there was gunshots in it.
I saw it in theaters, too.
Did you see it in theaters?
Yeah.
I remember being weirdly excited for it.
Well, I mean, Chris Rock was, like, super cool.
Yeah.
He might still be. I don't know. And it was like, oh, look, it's funny. He's with Anthony
Hopkins. He's not as hot. Like, he was hot.
Yeah, he was, like, a big deal. Like, yeah, he had the HBO show for a while there. And yeah, no, yeah, I remember being like, oh, this looks cool. And then
it was bad. Yeah, there's one good joke where the woman gets out of the towel and she goes, can I have a towel? And he hands her a hand towel.
That's
all I remember from
it. Get it, Chris.
All right, senior pranks. The kids love them in high school. You have a senior prank?
Yes.
Okay.
Well, no. I'm sorry. We had a plan for one. It didn't go as planned.
Okay.
We couldn't get enough people to commit. We were all going to, because about a week before you clean out your lockers, like it's like a locker cleanup thing, and they would come around and inspect to make sure you got everything out of your locker and stuff. We were all going to put cheap alarm clocks and set them all for like, 15 minutes after we all left the last day.
Yeah.
So they'd all go off at the same time.
What a great idea.
Yeah, really good. We never did it, though. But somebody released live snakes onto the stage at graduation.
Oh.
Yeah.
No.
They were, like, crawling all over the graduation stage. It was
horrible. Would be the worst thing in the world.
It
That's
was
like a horror movie.
Terrifying. But, yeah. The best, though, was many years before I graduated. I think this is back in the early 70s. Somebody dismantled an entire car.
Yeah.
And then reassembled the car on top of Berkeley High School. So there was just a car sitting up there. It was up there for a long time, too. No one knew how to get it down.
You guys are so much more clever
than
the folks. Okay.
What did you guys do?
Our senior prank. A, nun. B, food fight. C, a giant flag outside the door that had a hand-drawn penis.
Penis flag.
Oh, I wish.
None?
No, I just made that one up. That would have been hilarious.
Penis flag would be sweet.
Yeah, it ended up being none because that was a kind of a trick question. But the year before, this we couldn't have, like, they got word. We had some plans for a senior prank.
Uh-huh.
I don't remember exactly what they were. We have a listener, too, that could probably fill us in.
Okay.
But we had plans for a senior prank, people did. And they said, if you are involved in any sort of prank, you cannot walk in graduation.
That was a big thing. I think that was part of the reason why people freaked out about the alarm clock thing.
Yeah.
But if you do it at graduation. That's why they did the snakes.
That was kind of, but we ended up having none because the year before, the seniors, the year before, they had had a food fight. And I'm going to be honest with you, it wasn't even a food fight. It was them just chucking food as hard as they could at, like, underclassmen. We ran out of there like it was some sort of a firefight in a war. Like, Joe and I, my buddy Joe and I, and I think Davis, like, we ran through the halls like, oh, my God.
It was like the opening scene of Saving Private Ryan.
Seniors just gunned crappy pizza at kids.
That's horrible.
And, like, they had to, like, they were so mad. The janitor was, like, screaming at people. and so they're like, you will not have a senior prank. All right, last question. Class song. People love the class songs. Mm. Can't get enough of them. Our class song was A, the graduation song by Vitamin C. B, an original song by my two fellow seniors. C, Good Riddance by Green Day. Time of your life.
I'll go original song.
It was an original song. That's an easy question. You're 4 for 5 though, 80%.
Not too shabby.
Yeah, I don't remember the song. I don't even know if I remember who sang it, but I'm sure if you're listening, you did a fantastic job.
Ours was from what I understood, and this is at the time what people were saying, Everlong won.
That's a good.
But then they picked something else instead.
Yeah.
And I don't remember what it was, and it wasn't very good.
That kind of seemed like what happened here, too. Yeah. Like, they had a song written.
Yeah. Like, Green Day probably won.
Occasion. Yeah, like...
well, I feel like we can't play that.
Yeah. I was... that's a graduation song by Vitamin C.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's it, everybody. Hope you enjoyed that quick trip back in time.
Yeah, good
2002
stuff.
At Gaylord High School in Gaylord, Michigan.
I feel like we were always destined to do this show together. It seems like we were pretty much on the same page.
Yeah.
Yeah, rodeo burgers all day.
28 days later, Willie.
Yeah.
We're going to talk about this movie a little. Directed by one Mr. Danny Boyle.
Yes.
Written by
Alex Garland,
who is just off of that science fiction movie that I really like.
Ex Machina.
Ex Machina, which was awesome.
Which was sweet.
4 weeks after a mysterious, incurable virus spreads throughout the UK, a handful of survivors try to find sanctuary. Starring Cillian Murphy, Naomi Harris, Christopher Eccleston. This was released in the USA in 2003, but...
Yeah, but it...
2002 on Google, so we're doing it.
Yeah.
And also, I want to do it, because it's awesome. Willie, what do you think about this?
Oh, I love 28 Days Later. Yeah. This one was... So, I grew up with the Romero zombie movies, and I was a huge zombie... Like, I loved the zombie genre. And this came around at a time when, like, I had kind of run... Like, I watched Burial Ground. That's how, like, rough things got for me. I was starting to run out of options.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've ever seen that.
Yeah.
It's not good.
Yeah.
So... When this thing, I had heard about this before, because once again, this is early internet, and I like found this thing online, this 28 Days Later thing, and I was like, oh my God, it's a zombie movie, and it's new, and it looks sweet, and I watched the trailer in the library at school, and I was like, oh shit, and I talked to somebody about it in school, and they're like, I can get you a copy of that, and I'm like, yes, like this wasn't back when it was easy, this is like some underground shit, like how could you get this foreign film? For me, and he did. Mm-hmm. And I had a portable DVD player. Remember when those were a thing?
Oh, yeah.
Little screen built in?
Yep.
I had one.
Yeah.
It broke so fast. But I had one.
I think my parents still have one.
And I sat in seminar, which was our like free hour in school, and I popped this bad boy. It was two discs. It was the first half of the movie and then the second half of the movie. So I popped it in, and I played the first half in seminar, and I was just like mesmerized on this shitty little screen. I was like... This is so fucking good. Like, I was, like, losing my mind. Like, I couldn't contain myself. I was telling everybody about it and stuff. And then the next day, I'm like, all right, disc two. Here we go. I'm going to finish the movie. And I go pop in disc two, and it didn't work.
Oh, my God.
So I literally, the last scene I saw up until a year later when it was released in the U.S. was the scene just as the blood droplet falls down.
That's where it left off?
Yes.
Oh, what a bummer for you.
It was heartbreaking. But it made me want to see the movie more.
Yeah.
And so I went and saw it in theaters, and it fucking blew my mind. Mm-hmm. And you know what? It's still great. Like, it's still really good.
It might be even better.
I would honestly say it's one of the best horror films ever made.
Yeah.
And I truly mean that.
I might be with you. It's, in my opinion, it's at least the best, if not one of the best movies, horror movies of the aughts, like the first 10 years.
Oh, 100%. It might be the best.
Yeah, yeah.
It's so damn good. And the thing is, it's from a director who does, you know, who's not a horror director. In fact, Danny Boyle is probably one of the more interesting directors, period, because he switches genres so frequently from film to film, and he generally exceeds at all of them, in my opinion. But this is my favorite of his films, and probably because I do love the horror genre so much. All the characters are interesting in this movie to me, every single one of them. There aren't a ton of characters in this movie, but they're all interesting, and you don't need a ton of their backstory or anything. You learn a lot about them through their actions and through their motivations and why they choose to do things. You don't want any of them to die. You feel for all of them. You're really rooting for them to figure out a way to get the hell out of this situation that seems impossible to get out of. The infected are terrifying. They're still scary as hell. Just the bleeding from the eyes, and they're so effing fast. And that was one of the things, too, that was like...
This is kind of the first Fast.
It
well,
is.
They're not zombies.
No, and I know a lot of people that would say, oh, this is not a zombie movie, but it's a zombie movie.
It's a zombie movie, yeah.
Yeah, they're just... They're not corpses. They're living people.
Right.
Which is almost sadder and scarier.
Yeah.
But this is the first Fast one, because a couple years later, and we might talk about it at some point, the Dawn of the Dead remake would come out, and I think the reason why they chose to do the Fast zombie thing is because of 20 Days Later, why they chose to speed up the zombies. And I'm still a slow zombie guy, overall.
Me
I would
too.
Say. But here's the thing is, I don't understand the argument that you can't enjoy both.
No, me neither.
I never
especially when it comes to a remake of Dawn of the Dead, because you got to do something different anyway.
Yeah, and it's an action. That movie's an action movie.
Yeah.
Everything about this, there's a love story in this movie that works. I buy into it 110%. There's significant drama and really cool character beats. Jim visiting his parents' house in particular is...
Oh, my gosh.
Woo! Man, is that rough.
Yeah.
That when he flips that picture over and it says, don't wake up, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it. It's freaky.
This is going to come off like I'm saying horror movies are like the gutter, because they're not. That's obvious. So I don't think
we're doing a show based around
them. Yeah, so. I don't think that. But when you have people, Danny Boyle and Alex Garland are talents on another level. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, and that's the kind of stuff, that scene right there is, and I've forgotten about it, is the kind of stuff you get when you get talents like that.
Yes.
Yeah.
When you're able to find a director who would work well in any genre.
That's what I meant, yeah.
Who's just a really talented director all around. It happens so rarely, and it's so disappointing to me. Mm-hmm. But when you pluck them out of whatever they're currently working on and you put them in the horror genre, oftentimes those wind up being the more interesting.
I think Steve Spielberg, I mean, I guess Jaws is kind of.
Jaws and Duel are both arguably in the horror.
But I know he would be perfect for this, and I think he's even said in interviews.
Yeah.
Because War of the Worlds, too.
Yeah,
and I think I'll talk a little bit about it when I go. But War of the Worlds had some moments of horror in it.
Oh yeah, for sure. I know I love this movie. I remember the one weaker area for me back then. I still loved it, but is once they get to the military, the mansion that they're staying in. I remember being a little bit let down by that portion of the movie because I felt like. I felt like we were veering too close to Day of the Dead territory, because there's this weird thing, and I think I talked to you about it where the three acts, there's three very clear cut acts of 28 Days Later, and each one feels like one to me, and I don't think it's necessarily purposeful, but each one feels like one of the three original Romero trilogy.
Yep.
The first one is it's very isolationist. It's about people that don't trust each other, that are thrust into this situation by themselves. The second one is about them trying to salvage some sort of enjoyment and existence out of what's going on. And the third one is them coming into contact with a group of people who should be the ones that have control and should be the ones who have the situation figured out and and they should be in a safe place, and they're not. And that's very much Day of the Dead.
It's the most dangerous act.
It is.
Yeah.
It's the most threatening. Yeah. And once again, like most great zombie things in the zombie genre, and I would include The Walking Dead in this, too. I mean, I was a big fan of the comics early on, and I liked the first couple scenes of the show quite a bit. The most dangerous things are the other people.
Yeah.
And to be honest, that would be the way it is. Especially with the slow zombies in, like, other movies. Like, when you really think about it, I mean, you could do a lot to get away from those things. But, you know, in this, even in this situation where they're heightened and they're faster, the military guys are terrifying. And you kind of know it right as soon as you meet them. You're like, something's wrong. But yeah, it's a fantastic movie. And I think the decision to make it the way he made it on all that, like, digital Hi-8, whatever he used, either like the Hi-8, like he used like handheld digital cameras at the time, which weren't what they are now, video quality wise, but he used that for the entire movie, and it gives it this sense of, it's interesting because it feels more like a found footage movie and more believable as a found footage movie than most found footage movies feel.
I was gonna say it reminded me this time a little bit of, because we just watched it, Blair Witch.
Yeah, it captures the aesthetic of a found footage movie without all that obnoxious stuff that has to come with it, where you're explaining why character's holding a camera the whole time.
Yeah.
Where you're having to, like, to tell the audience why somebody would be filming this, because there is nobody, you know, but it still has that weird documentary feel. And
it's got an immediacy to it.
Yeah.
And it works especially well in that first act.
That's when it really...
Yep, because it's kind of going around and it's showing the aftermath and it kind of plops you in this world.
Oh yeah. You're thrust into it. That opening sequence is mesmerizing.
Yeah.
And the fact
the
that
music,
they,
oh my god, I forgot how good the music was in this movie.
The score is incredible.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that they were able to accomplish shutting down those major intersections even for minutes. Some of those shots they literally had
yeah,
had like a matter of 2-3 minutes to film. Killian Murphy walking through, it works. I buy every second of it. And if you watch it, you can see the angles they choose, why they choose the angles they choose. I mean, you could see, if you dug enough into it, you could go, oh, they're hiding that. That's cool. You know, but
yep,
it almost makes me respect it more because you're like, holy shit, how do they accomplish this scale? You know, it's impressive stuff, but I'll get a little deeper into it in a minute, but yeah, I love this movie.
Yeah,
it's fantastic. Yeah.
Yep. I love it too. this is weird to say, for a couple of reasons. This movie was filmed in September of 2001. And when I think of movies that kind of encapsulate, you know what I mean?
Yes.
This time, particularly around 9/11, I think this is one of the great 9/11 movies, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
It captures so many fears of the time. I mean, the first act is all about him walking around London after it's just been decimated.
Desolate London.
Desolate, yeah, by some sort of attack. He doesn't know.
Yeah.
Kind of like people in America, around here, oh my God, it's all of a sudden it's a new reality now.
Well, look at if you look at footage, and I, you know, I've seen enough of it to never have to look at it again, but if you look at footage of the day or even the weeks following the World Trade Center attacks, the images of these people wandering around aimlessly stick in my brain. Also, the missing posters.
That's the other thing I can think of. Yeah. The three movies I thought of as kind of like the quintessential, maybe is a better word for it, 9/11 movies,
sure,
are this one, 25th Hour by Spike Lee, I think is, that captures a lot of emotion around this time. And then War of the Worlds. I actually think War of the Worlds.
Sure.
The Spielberg one.
I get that.
Is that. But I found a quote. I believe it's from Danny Boyle or Alex Garland. But they're talking about the notice board at Piccadilly Circus. And it was shot before the 11th of September 11th.
Which is insane to me.
Yeah, because it's so on the nose of what would happen like a week later. And he says, the image was based on a photograph I'd seen from an earthquake in China, but it's clearly based on a very human impulse. People trying to contact each other, trying to maintain links with other people when the normal channels have died or seem inadequate. Obviously, Ground Zero is the most recent and probably the biggest example, Ground Zero being 9/11. But if you look at it, any of those catastrophes that happen, where people feel loss of control and information about what has gone on, it's a natural thing that people do. I wouldn't have filmed it after September 11th, but we tried in the editing of it to make sure that it was done, that it didn't feel prurient or intrusive upon people's real grief. But I think that's what made it so powerful for me this time around, is because it's this weird thing where, like, oh, it puts you right back in that time, in that mental space,
sure,
where I was at when I saw a lot of those things.
And let's say, too, real quick, I think one of the scary things about this version of the zombie apocalypse that's so scary is that, it's like you said, these aren't traditional zombies. These aren't dead people.
No.
This is a virus.
Yeah.
And it's one that you...
It's a virus, and I think it's amazing the way the virus is unleashed in that beginning, because it's done... And another thing that I wanted to... Because the SARS virus happened around this time.
Yeah.
And so that's another fear that is somehow in this movie, too. But it's unleashed. The virus is unleashed by, essentially, activists.
Yeah.
Like environmental activists or like animal rights
like
activists.
Like a PETA type
deal. Thank you. That's what I was thinking
sure.
of. And it's this weird thing where like it's kind of like the road to hell paved with good intention
mm-hmm.
type things. And I think that's amazing. Like I had forgotten that that's how it happened. As far as the movie goes, I'm in the same boat as you. I used to, first time I saw it, I think I remember being kind of bored by the third act, maybe, or right before the end of the movie is where I just kind of fell
right
out
for
of
the
it.
Grand finale.
And
yeah.
it's still the weakest part of the movie to me, because
sure.
the grand finale is awesome, where Cillian Murphy does business.
Gets scarier than any infected.
Does business. But this time, oh man, the whole movie just worked for me, beginning to end. I think it's fantastic. In its structure, it's fantastic. The music is so good. Every single character, every single main character, those three main characters, and even Brennan Gleeson's character, too.
Oh, I love Brennan Gleeson so much.
They all have arcs, and they all have pretty great arcs. And they all come together. They all build and come together in that third act,
yep.
and it's fantastic. Naomi Harris is maybe my favorite character in all of the movies we watched tonight.
She's so
I think her character is so cool in this.
She's
because
so
she,
cool.
She starts off as kind of a hard ass, and...
Which she's running the risk of being like obnoxious.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then she softens, but it's not necessarily. I mean, she softens towards, but it's not because of Cillian Murphy. She softens.
No.
It's when she meets the little girl.
Yep.
That she does, and I think that's such a cool moment.
Yep.
Such a cool trait, and such a cool development. No, I'm incredibly happy we watched this again because it's so good, and yeah, there were a couple other quotes I wanted to talk about, because this does encapsulate a lot of the themes that were going around in this time. One of them being kind of paranoia, and paranoia has been a consistent thing throughout the years since, the 2000s, and a lot of it is because of the world getting smaller a little bit, but this is another quote from Alex Garland. This is a CNN interview this time, but he goes, the zombies in the movie represent paranoia in modern society. In exact proportion to how safe they've gotten, people are increasingly afraid of street violence or domestic violence and terrorism now. That kind of went through my head, too, as I watched it, and especially when you get in the second half of this movie, because you realize at a certain point, like, the zombies aren't the bad guys at this point. I mean, they're out there, and they're scary,
yeah.
but they're pretty safe by the time they get
yeah
to that mansion. And it's them turning on each other
yep.
that is the issue. And I kind of think of that, a lot today you see it with, I want to say, the refugee crisis in
sure.
a lot of ways. You
sure.
see people that aren't necessarily, the people that seem to be as scared of refugees coming over, they don't live in areas where they're going to interact with them very often. And those seem to be the ones that are more scared of them. It kind of reminded me, that's what the third act kind of reminded me of in this
sure.
movie. So, that's really, because at the end of the day, it's not going to be some sort of zombie outbreak that kills us all. It's
probably
going to be human beings turning on other human beings,
yeah.
much like that is in the third act. And I remember at the time, too, being kind of blown away. And I took it differently as a younger person, because I don't think this is what the movie's trying to say at all, but the military was the bad guy in this movie.
Mm.
And I think that's unfair to say.
You know what's interesting, though, is I think it's... I don't think that this movie is doing that 100%. I think
no, me neither. Yeah.
I think what it's showing is that extremism is dangerous.
Exactly.
Because you've got, like you said, it opens with these a very extreme action for a good cause.
Mm-hmm.
Might be a noble cause, but if you go to those extremes, you can do more harm than good.
Right.
If you look at the kind of flip side of that coin with the military, who would very much be on the opposite end of the spectrum from these folks in this kind of PETA-esque group. they take things too extremely. They,
especially this group.
Yes, yeah. This particular group. And it, I think, if anything, it's arguing against extremism of any sort of political stance.
And I think the other thing is maybe it was just weird seeing around that time, like, the military presented in that light.
Sure.
I don't necessarily think they're the bad guys at all. I think they are reacting like human beings react when they are taught a very strict kind of like guidance.
Mm-hmm.
And when society breaks down and when their kind of guidance breaks down, their compass breaks down, I mean, this is kind of what happens. When they don't have something to guide them, I mean, it's not just soldiers. It's a lot of people. Anybody that's used to that kind of organizational structure.
Yeah.
I should say.
And I think the Christopher Eccleston character is another example of a character who is doing the wrong things with the right intentions.
Exactly.
He does not believe there's any hope of the world coming back. As far as they know, the entire world is this way.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you watch the sequel, you do find out, obviously, that it was just in England that this virus spread. They were able to quarantine it, you know, before it. But at this point, they don't know that.
Yep.
And so in their opinion, you know, they're thinking, we can reestablish society. We can start over. These women are the only way we can do it. Thank God they're here. Now, are there one or two of the soldiers, especially one I can think of, that are, like, legitimately just like nasty human beings? Yes, absolutely. There's one in particular that, the one that Jim kind of kills at the end there. He's just rough. But you almost see, looking at these guys, you see Christopher Eccleston is doing what he's doing out of fear, too. He's scared of the people he's in this mansion with, like, of what they're capable of, you know? Yeah.
I guess it's a more nuanced portrayal than what I remember Day of the Dead being like.
Day of the Dead is a lot bigger in terms of the performances.
Yes.
You know? Yeah, for sure. And I don't think there's a right or a wrong there, but you're right. It's absolutely more nuanced.
Mm-hmm.
They're much more villainous in Day of the Dead than this film. Yeah.
Right. Right. So, yeah, it's weird. I think we kind of covered what I was looking to cover.
Have you seen the sequel?
When it came out.
What'd you think?
It's okay. I remember people liked it, I think, right?
Yeah, it had a pretty good response. The opening sequence is unbelievably good.
Remind me of the opening sequence.
It starts with Robert Carlyle and his family in their little country home.
Oh, it is really good.
And they raid the shit out of that house, and he leaves his wife. Oh, my God. That opening sequence, I remember just going, holy shit, they're going to do it. Like, they're going to somehow top this first movie.
Yeah.
And it doesn't. It's honestly, it's not a bad sequel. As far as horror sequels go, it's not bad.
I remember.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's fine. I think it's worth a watch.
Yeah, yeah. I should rewatch it.
It doesn't damage anything from the first. I'll say that. And it's got early performances from Jeremy Renner. Jeremy Renner's in it. Idris Elba's in it.
Okay.
Rose Byrne's in it. Mm-hmm. Harold Perrineau is in it.
Okay.
So.
Did he say Walt? Does he cry for Walt the whole time?
No. He kills like a hundred infected with a helicopter, though. He flies at him with the blade tilted down.
Yeah.
And it just chops
him. Oh, that is sweet. Yeah. That is sweet. Yeah. The other thing I want to ties into 28 Weeks Later is this kind of kicked off a, much like The Ring kind of kicked off a J-horror.
Mm.
This was kind of the kickoff of a zombie.
Yeah,
rebirth.
We'd get, I think this and Resident Evil.
Resident Evil came out this year.
Yeah.
And then that would lead into
Dawn of the Dead.
Dawn of the Dead.
Land of the Dead.
Zombieland.
Yep.
In the 2000s.
The Walking Dead.
The Walking Dead is a big one. I'm sure I'm forgetting a couple, but that's pretty much about it. What I mean,
The Signal is a zombie movie, kind of in a way.
Yeah,
I
think that zombie movies seem to be, because that's kind of the thing right now. Is everybody is worried about some sort of like, it's
I get it
the apocalypse all the time right now, and
I think we're looking at more of a Mad Max scenario though, realistically.
Right, but then I mean I can see why. Zombies kind of had a rebirth around this time because, I mean, taking into account the virus aspect of zombies, too. So,
God, what was I going to ask? Oh, have you read the comics?
The 28 Weeks Later comics?
28 Days Later comics,
Days Later comics? No.
So, real quick, I'm going to spoil a little bit here, and I'm just going to. First of all, they got really good response, and apparently they're quite good. I don't think it's currently going anymore, but it's actually about Selena after...
Okay.
This. So it's a sequel. And like it's got like the meanest like opening ever because like I'm just gonna spoil it. Sorry guys. Jim, mm-hmm. like you find out was like tried and convicted for the death of that military squad and they kill him in a firing squad. Like they
Who wrote these?
I think Alex Garland had a hand in it.
Okay.
I'm fairly certain he at least consulted on some of this stuff. It's mostly about Selena, though.
Okay.
And I think what happens is it's her going back to England, and then the events of 28 weeks later happen, you know, like where the virus gets released again, and it's her trying to survive again.
Michael Allen Nelson, I'm looking at it right now.
Hannah's in it briefly. But yeah, the Jim character, I was like, oh, man, that's kind of mean.
Yeah, no, I haven't read him. It was the first time I'd seen the alternate ending, too. I let the credits play. I didn't even know it existed. I went outside, let the credits play, and I came back in, and there was an alternate ending playing where Cillian Murphy was on a operating table.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's different than... I kind of like the happy ending.
There's a...
Well, the maybe happy ending. I think it's a happy ending.
I prefer the uplifting one.
Yeah.
The other ending that's actually on the DVD is... It was never shot, but it was storyboarded. And they actually show you the storyboards and voice act over the characters, so you can see the ending as it would have played out. And it actually... It's a completely different third act, actually. Because...
Oh, yeah.
Because Frank becomes infected with the drop of blood. And they manage to... kind of rope him up and get him to this CDC type facility, this Center for Disease Control kind of thing. There's no military.
Uh-huh.
There's a couple scientists there, and they find out that with a full blood transfusion, you can actually get rid of the virus. So if you do like a complete like Keith Richards style blood transfusion, like you can beat it. And at some point Jim gets shot and fatally wounded, and then does a full blood transfusion and saves Frank for Hannah. And I was like, wow, that's a different ending. And that's kind of cool, but I see why they went the route they did, because that could be kind of...
Right.
It seemed like it would be weirdly boring, them kind of just hanging out at the CDC. And
what's your favorite shot in this movie?
Oh, God.
I'm putting you on the spot, because I just thought of one.
God.
I posted it on Twitter, actually.
Him crossing the bridge is pretty great.
Yeah.
It's a pretty great shot.
The other one I remember is the Big Ben in the background.
That's great. Them driving down, there's a shot of them driving down the freeway, and it's, I think they stop for a second, mm-hmm. and you can see, it's Manchester, I think.
Yeah.
And they see it burning from where they're at. And and they're just like, well, we can't go through there. And you're just, like, because that instantly plays in your head, oh, man, how bad is Manchester? Like, shit's bad there, you know. So that I like that shot quite a bit.
The one I thought of originally was the one where he's walking up the stairs and it says, the end is fucking nigh.
Oh, God.
And it's just hovering over him. This is after he walks into the church, right?
Yeah. He's like going up the stairs. That shot, too, where he looks over the railing and he yells hello and those two pop up and just stare at him. I was like, oh, God, what the fuck? Oh, God. It freaks me out still, so.
All right. 28 days later. Yep. Amazing.
Yeah, it's super awesome.
Yeah. All right. You want to talk some badasses?
Let's do it.
All right, Willie. We are about to talk about, for our last movie, Dog Soldiers, a real badass.
There are a lot of badass characters.
There are a lot of badass characters.
Sean Pertwee being
the badass. Yeah, if you want a positive portrayal.
Yeah, of the military. Yeah, yeah. if they were with this group of guys.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's the difference. The soldiers and there are kind of... They're grunts without a leader.
Yeah.
These guys are all hardcore, crazy maniacs.
They got the right man to stand behind.
Yeah. Yep.
Kevin McKidd would keep them all safe.
Yes. So, badasses really in the horror genre. Now, there aren't a ton of, like off the top of my head, male badasses in horror movies outside of, where I don't think, maybe you are, I didn't think of any of them like serial killer, like slashers.
No. I don't think there's something cool, bad. There's nothing bad.
I was thinking more protagonists.
Yes.
And who did you think of?
All right. Can we just? And I'm just going to say the actor because he's played a badass in multiple. Tom Atkins.
Yeah. Which movie?
Particularly Night of the Creeps.
Okay.
Anybody? He's a hard-nosed detective. Yeah. Right. He shoots all the alien zombies, and when he answers the phone, he just says, thrill me. And it's the fucking best. And he drinks a lot of whiskey, if I remember right, in the movie. And he smokes cigars, and he's awesome.
Right.
Like, he is he's a man.
He is a man.
Yeah.
He's a man, and the only other one I would think of with him in it is Halloween 3.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
He's kind of a man's man.
Oh, he fights robots. He beds this woman who's, like, 12 years younger than him.
Also
like,
drinks.
Yep, drinks.
Cheats on his wife.
Yeah. He's always he's a consummate badass. Ken Forey in Dawn of the Dead.
Yeah.
He's fucking awesome.
He is awesome.
Like, he's a badass. And he jump kicks a zombie at one point for no real... He doesn't have to,
I mean, there's always a reason, but yeah.
Yeah, you should, but not everybody can pull it off. Ken Foree pulls it off. There's that moment towards the end of Dawn of the Dead where he's considering committing suicide. He's got the gun to his head. It seems like all is lost. She's taking off in the helicopter. And then all of a sudden this music kicks in, and it's like, it's like the G.I. Joe theme song. And he just starts kicking everybody. And it's so fucking sweet. So yeah, Ken Foree is a super badass. And then I got to throw out my personal favorite badass. And this is an action horror movie, but I think it's close enough to horror to count. Mr. State of the Badass Art himself. Private William Hudson from Aliens.
Yeah.
Bill Paxton.
Yeah.
There's a badass. Now, he doesn't start off as one. He claims to be one, and then he kind of like becomes like the whiny bitch of the movie, except for Paul Reiser. No one's more whiny than Paul Reiser. But then at the end,
Paul Reiser sucks.
I hate him so much. He deserved a way nastier death than he got in that movie. But then there's this moment where the Paxton's prophecy becomes true. Because he becomes the ultimate badass.
Yeah.
He kills like 200 aliens in one scene. And and then he's being pulled down into like the vents, and he's still killing the one. That's.
Do you think he's the biggest badass in Aliens?
You know, it's tough. That's a movie full of badasses.
That's the thing.
Honestly,
I think he's like the third biggest.
He is the third biggest. Yeah. I know,
understand.
If I have a son,
yeah.
He's being named after.
We were kind of gearing this towards male.
Yes.
Badasses. Because there's quite a few female.
Honestly, the biggest badass in that movie? I don't know. It's so tough. I'm going to go Vasquez.
I go Vasquez and then...
And then Ripley.
And then Ripley, yeah.
And then probably Michael Biehn. And then Bill Paxton. But Bill Paxton has this speech about being a badass. That's what makes him so. Even Lance Henriksen's kind of a badass in that movie.
Well, he definitely is. But does he count because he's...
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't... Yeah.
Or like, cut it off.
Yeah.
Spoilers.
Yeah. Even Newt's kind of a little badass.
Yeah.
Yeah. Everybody.
The only one that... Any non-Paul Reiser character.
Yes. All the rest of them are badasses. So yeah, those that's a few examples that I like to throw out there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I was thinking about this too. The first one that popped in my mind was Reggie from Phantasm, the sequels mainly.
Oh, 110%. That guy is a badass.
Yeah. The first one that like popped in my mind, because I think people, is Ash.
He's not, though.
But he's not. Ash is not a badass.
He's kind of a dipshit.
He's a dipshit the entire time. Even in, because I Googled a couple lists.
Mm-hmm.
And, okay, good. I found that. And like, even Army of Darkness, he's a stupid ass.
Yeah, that's like saying Jack Burton in Big Trouble is a badass. He's not.
Yeah.
No, Dennis Dunn's a badass in that movie.
Exactly. Yeah, Dennis Dunn's awesome.
He's the hero of the movie.
Like, that's the joke. And so I kind of felt like when I was looking at the list, I kept seeing Ash. I'm like, you're not in on the joke right now.
No.
The other one, I go half and half on Snake Plissken.
Okay.
Because I don't. Maybe that's not horror, but it popped in my head because of John Carpenter.
Well, we can.
I'm not completely sure he's a badass either. Like, he is kind of, but he's also there's a tinge of parody to him.
Oh,
the
sure,
entire time,
sure.
Where you kind of roll your eyes at him a lot of the time.
Yeah, like he'll cut it out, Snake.
Yeah, it's cut it out, Snake. He's kind of a dipshit.
He's like almost too badass for his own good.
Yes. Yeah, and you can tell like, oh well, you're being super badass right now. Like that's why you got arrested, dumbass.
That's like any time I see like an anime character on anything.
Yeah.
I don't know anything about the anime, but like if I see an anime character, I'm like, that person has way too much cool shit.
Yeah.
Like, you got to trim one or two cool things off. Like the eye patch. He's got an eye patch. He's got a snake tattoo.
Yeah.
He's got muscles. He's got a sick haircut. It's too much.
It is too much.
Yeah, dial it back, Snake.
Yeah, yeah. It's self-parody. So now that we've covered people that are badasses, Father Marin from The Exorcist.
Oh, my God.
He's a total badass. Like, he might be one of my favorite characters in all of horror.
He is.
He's so cool.
He is the coolest. I read the book recently.
Oh,
I think I mentioned that maybe before on the show. Do you remember the scene where Father Marin goes upstairs and he shuts the door when he first gets to the house,
mm-hmm.
and she pukes on him, and then he walks out, and he's like, all right, let's start the exorcism.
Yeah.
In the book, he comes in, and she's like, oh, can I get you some tea or anything? He goes, no, I'm going to head upstairs now.
Yeah.
And she's like, already? And he's like, yes. And he just goes up the stairs, and you can hear Reagan, like, screaming for Marin while she's up there. And he goes up there, and he goes in, he shuts the door. He just stares. They literally stare at each other for like 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Just staring at each other. And then she just goes, you're going to die this time, Marin. And then he just smirks at her and walks out. And I'm like, oh my God, he's so cool.
He's so cool. Father Marin, he's an underrated badass.
Yeah,
like he's
sure.
Because he's seen some shit. And like he's ready to go. Like he's just like a and I do want to mention the Exorcist TV show real quick because the Father Marcus Keene in that, Ben Daniels in that, is sweet.
Yeah.
Like there's like a scene with kind of like an exorcism like style Fight Club type deal. Like, and he's so cool.
Is that gonna get a season two? Do we know yet?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
I hope so.
Yeah, me too. Me too. Other badasses. George Clooney's character in From Dusk Till Dawn.
Oh my God.
Sweet. Yeah.
He's awesome.
Frank Grillo in The Purge.
He's pretty cool.
He's pretty cool. There's a woman in The Purge, actually, election year, that's cooler. She's kind of like serious. The only, this is going away from males, but the female, the first one I thought of there was the woman from Your Next.
Oh my God. Trani Vincent? Oh my God. She's so cool.
And then the last one, the ultimate badass, Blade 2.
Oh, yeah. Just Blade and Blade 2.
Just Blade and Blade 2. Yep. Maybe Ron Perlman and Blade 2.
He's pretty badass.
Yeah. We talked about Blade 2 all the time.
Yep. Yeah. Which is funny because Norman Reedus is a total weenie in that movie.
Norman Reedus is like the Paul Reiser
of
Blade 2.
Of Blade 2.
Oh, you know what? Christofferson's pretty sweet. Whistler's pretty sweet in Blade 2. Actually, Blade 2 is just... Oh, my God. Nomak might be the biggest badass in Blade 2.
They're all badass. That's another movie where it's like, okay. Yeah. The movie's way too cool.
Blade 2 is almost like the Aliens of like Marvel movies.
Yes.
Or
movie. No, it is.
It's so good.
It's so sweet.
It's the best.
I'm going to go home and watch Blade 2.
We all are. Yeah. Let's talk.
Yeah, if you got any badasses, let us know.
Yeah.
I'm sure we missed a lot. So.
No, we totally did. Because we half-assed that badass segment. Dog Soldiers. Released in 2002. Directed by and written by Neil Marshall. You like Neil Marshall?
I love Neil Marshall.
I love Neil Marshall, too. I like all of his movies. Even Centurion's pretty sweet.
He's also, like, if you can ever catch an interview with Neil Marshall, like, listen to an interview, dude, it's a class act.
The Scream Factory. I went to the that panel in Chicago.
Yeah.
I was up there with his wife, and I think he was kind of hungover. He had just screened Centurion the night before.
Okay.
Somewhere in Chicago. And it almost seemed like he celebrated. He was celebrating the screening.
Good for him.
He seemed to be in no mood to be up there about 45 minutes.
Neil's got to get down, too.
But no, the Scream Factory Blu-ray, tried to dig into a little bit. I haven't listened to the commentary.
Okay.
But I did watch, there's a making of on there that's pretty sweet. They kind of talk about the experiences. Apparently, they had the idea for it back in 1995.
Wow.
Like 7 years before. Apparently, there's like the 18th draft of the script.
Jeez.
Which makes me laugh, kind of. Because
it's so simple.
Yeah, it is really simple. But that's why it works so well.
They probably had to pare it down.
I was going to say, it's structured really well. Yeah. Speaking of the plot, a routine military exercise turns into a nightmare in the Scotland wilderness. That's it.
Yeah, that's about right.
Yeah. Basically, essentially, a group of soldiers go into the Scotland wilderness and are attacked by big werewolves.
Awesomely designed werewolves.
They're so sweet.
They're so sweet. These might be my favorite werewolves.
I was going to ask you.
Yeah. I think these are my favorites.
What else is good?
See, the transformation in London, in American Werewolf in London,
yes,
is the best transformation. I don't think it's the best finished werewolf. I think these are cooler finished werewolves.
Kind of like the Howling Werewolf.
Finished werewolf, yes, yeah. Better. But I like these better.
The Howling, we talked about that, has like a 20-minute trend.
It goes on. Robert Picardo just won't stop. But this one, you see no transformations.
Yeah.
In fact, most of the werewolves you don't see in human form at any point.
They're so cool. The werewolves are so cool. And part of the reason I found some trivia out on this is he cast, like, instead of stunt people in the werewolves, he cast dancers.
That's so much cooler.
Yeah.
Honestly, I find that the times I hear that mentioned, they usually wind up giving better performances,
yeah.
I think. Stuntmen can do great stuff. I mean, look at, you know, Kane Hodder as Jason. That's a stroke of genius. I'm not trying to diss stuntmen in any way, shape, or form, but there's something about a dancer that they're so in tune with their own body and their own movements and their range of motion that you can get. There's oftentimes more performance bleeds through that costume,
especially when you're going for something like a horror movie that might be creepier and more stealthy.
Yeah, and these werewolves are—they're weird. They're disproportionate in the coolest ways. They're kind of lanky and tall, kind of gangly, but they're very cool. But they can run on all fours still. And they're an interesting design. They're almost bald on most of their body, with like tufts of hair that come out.
Right.
It's really creepy. I love them. They have these huge long snouts, and yeah, I really dig the werewolves in this movie. And I like that they're kept in shadow for the most part, because I think if they were up front and center the whole time, you would see some of the strings, you know, some of the seams and stuff, because this was a low budget movie. But
this is a really well shot first movie by someone, because he is really smart with where he places the camera and where how he uses shadows to kind of hide some of the seams. Because I thought like it was just the werewolves in like the very end, like the third act, and they were kind of like obscured by like cameras. But they're in full view quite a bit.
Yeah, they're pretty present.
And the way he shoots it is really smart. Kevin Smith could have learned a couple things in Tusk, where he just overlit the hell out of everything.
Yeah,
and,
everything's kind of the lighting is smart.
I like how the lighting was the worst part of Tusk.
Right. The lighting is smart, and also the what he chooses to put in the frame anytime a werewolf is on screen is very smart. You almost never see a full body shot unless there's a couple moments where you need to, because you need that moment of shock and awe.
I remember the one where he's down on the ground pointing the gun.
Yep. But oftentimes it's a very extreme close up on part of the wolf, you know, the snout or the claw or whatever it is. And I think that's more effective that way. Mm-hmm. There's even sequences where you like the character sees a werewolf and is shooting at it, but you don't, you know, it's like almost a POV shot.
Right.
From the werewolf's perspective.
It's a good-looking, low-budget movie.
It is. It really is. Very slick. Impressive. This movie's awesome.
Oh, yeah. What did you think of the movie?
It's a ton of fun. I discovered Dog Soldiers. Oh, boy. When did I see? The Descent was coming out. I think it was 2005 it came out, The Descent.
Yeah, that sounds
It was coming out. I had seen the trailer. I was like, wow, that looks really cool. Had a ton of good buzz from all the early screenings and stuff. You know, people saying like, oh, this is the next great, you know, horror movie, or haven't seen a movie this scary since Alien. You know, all the buzzwords that you hear now that I think I'm kind of cynical about them now. Yeah. But at the time, I remember going, oh, shit. I think the last time I had seen that kind of buzz for a movie was 28 Days Later. Mm-hmm. And that one turned out, obviously worked out well. So I was really excited for The Descent, and I looked him up, checked him out. I'm like, okay, I got to find this Dog Soldiers movie. And that's when I checked it out, then, and I was impressed then, and I'm still impressed now. I love a good siege movie. I've always been a big fan. Yeah. I love that, group of people up against like, insurmountable odds. They have to, you know, I think the original siege movie I saw was, I keep talking about Romero today, but it's probably 'cause I'm excited to meet Romero.
Yeah. Yeah. A couple months.
Night of the Living Dead is the first siege movie I remember seeing, and I remember loving it from the word go. I just love the idea of these like a ragtag group that has to hold up somewhere under like just impossible odds. There's no way they can make it out, you know. And this one does it well. It's one of the best ones in that kind of subgenre. I'm not a big werewolf movie fan in general. I'm arguably more. I find myself enjoying, I'm not a huge vampire movie fan either, but I find myself oftentimes enjoying vampire movies more than werewolf movies.
I think it's just, seems that there have been more things done with vampire movies, more different takes on
it. I think there is more to do with vampire
movies. I think
movies.
So too. Yeah. This is different than your normal vampire movie, because normally your vampire movie is a guy gets cursed as a vampire.
Werewolf.
Werewolf gets cursed.
Yeah, sorry.
No, this is a werewolf movie in the same way that like Dusk Till Dawn is a vampire
movie. Yes, 100%. Yep, absolutely. And I love that there really is no humanity to these werewolves. There's no, you don't see them transform.
Nope.
You don't. There's a couple characters that down the road that at least in part start to become werewolves, you know, due to injuries sustained and whatnot. But for the most part, they're just the wolves the whole time. And I will say, in terms of what this movie's trying to say for this time period, I think if you remember right, looking back on, once again, kind of our rush to go over to the Middle East after 9/11, a lot of people were comparing it, especially on the left side of things, were comparing it to kind of the rushed operation into Vietnam and what happened there. We didn't win. We lost pretty soundly. Mm-hmm. And I think people were very concerned about that again. You know, how many people are going to lose and what's going to be the point?
Yeah.
You know, and I get that. And I think this is a response to that in a lot of ways, because you've got a character, you got the Kevin McKidd character, who in the opening sequence is being asked to kill a dog for no real reason. He's not, you know, and he says, I'll kill a dog. I'm just not going to kill that dog. Why am I, there's no reason for me to do that. But it's that idea of like, why are we doing this? Mm-hmm. Like, what's our reasoning? We're just blindly, you know, rushing in there. And then if
and
you want
to be applied to a lot of situations.
Yeah. Sure. Absolutely. Yeah. And then if you want to go even further with it, I think also there's this constant mentioning the character. I can't believe I can't remember his name. The Special Forces team lead.
Okay.
He's actually in Game of Thrones. He's fantastic. He plays one of the supporting characters in Game of Thrones.
Okay.
But he keeps saying, "Oh, there was only supposed to be, so there was supposed to be just one, supposed to be just one, supposed to be just one." Bad intelligence and all this stuff.
Yeah.
And well, the bad intelligence thing definitely that's pretty easy to see a parallel there because
That's kind of well. I mean,
that was kind of the running excuse,
well, that's, and that's kind of a I mean, that's kind of a thing that runs across a lot of war movies. Is the people at the top
screw up?
They don't know. They're not down on the ground with the people in the shit.
Yep, and they're not. They're not willing to listen to the people.
Then they're
shit.
Not willing to listen because they. I mean, a lot of them look down on them in a way.
Oh,
especially
yeah.
Especially when it comes to intelligence, they think they know. So that's kind of a common theme throughout a lot of these type of movies. Yeah.
And for that matter, going back to Vietnam, and then if you want to compare that to, you know, kind of the war on terror, we went into Vietnam thinking, oh, we're going to kick their asses.
Yeah.
There are a bunch of people in the jungle, you know, with old, ancient Soviet-era weapons. They can't, you know. But what we forgot was there's a lot more of them than there were of us.
Yes.
And we're fighting on their turf. And that's exactly what's happening in this movie. They went in thinking that they had it handled, thinking that they were going to be able to outnumber and outgun their enemy, and they weren't. They were outnumbered and outgunned and outclassed because it wasn't their natural, you know. So I think there's something going on there. I think there's a kind of a commentary on the, I don't know, the foolishness of rushing into something that you don't understand.
Yeah,
so.
And the war drums are beating around this time.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Yeah, and the UK wasn't immune to what was going on in the world. They never are, but you know they were very much a part of what was going on. So
yeah. No, I like this movie too.
Yeah,
yeah, I like it a lot. I think it's awesome. I think it's badass.
Do you like Spoon?
I do like Spoon. So fun facts.
Okay.
Two very famous actors now were originally up for roles in this. Do you know who was up for Spoon?
I don't remember who was up for Spoon. I think I remember somebody who was up for Kevin McKidd's role.
Okay.
God, who was it? I'm blanking now.
He, the person you're thinking of for Kevin McKidd's role, I think would have been good in it.
Oh, up for Spoon was Simon Pegg.
Simon Pegg was up for was offered the role of Spoon, but he passed because he had promised Edgar Wright that his first film role would be in Shaun of the Dead.
That's such a bummer.
So that worked out well for him, though.
Yeah, it did.
Yeah.
Yeah. Would have been cool to see him in this role, too. Although the guy who plays Spoon is awesome, so.
If you could, yeah. Yeah, definitely. The second one, though, the Kevin McKidd character. Do you remember? He dropped out. This was a bad call by him. This did not work out. In the long run, it would work out for him. He's a very famous actor now. But he would... He would star in a John Carpenter movie around this time.
Oh yeah, Jason Statham.
Jason Statham.
Yep.
As Kevin McKidd.
He did Ghost of Mars.
He would be playing Kevin McKidd.
Yes, Jason Statham as Kevin McKidd.
I would like to see that, but Kevin McKidd's really good.
He's awesome. Yeah, and I think the thing about Jason Statham, I think people would, if it had been Statham and his career trajectory had gone the way it did now, I think people would look back on this and be like, oh, it's that stupid werewolf movie that Jason Statham did. You know, back when he was slumming it.
Yeah. Even though it's better than most of his.
Oh, 100%. But people would look at it that way, I think. With Kevin McKidd, he's not somebody that... First of all, I didn't know him from anything before this, but now knowing the roles he's taken and what he's done, he's not the guy you would expect necessarily for that type of role, that badass kind of military guy. So I think he's been on Grey's Anatomy for the last like 6 or 7 years.
He's
one of the leads on that. But I like Kevin McKidd quite a bit. He was up for Thor for a little bit there, from what I remember. They were looking for a little older little bit of an older Thor before
that.
I think he could fit the role, so
I feel pressure here.
Okay.
I know
Nick's a big fan.
Nick shows people.
I think I introduced Nick to Dogstalkers.
Did you?
Yeah. Yeah. I think that might be like 90% of our friendship has been him introducing me to stuff. So this was one of my small victories where I was like, good.
This works. It works in the. This movie works. It's well structured, much like 28 Days Later, especially. This, you can tell the three acts in this movie, and they're pretty, they're separated pretty well. This also works because, yeah, they're not making a straight up werewolf movie. They're making kind of a, you can tell Neil Marshall's influences throughout his career. I mean, he steals the font for Doomsday from John Carpenter.
Yes.
Doomsday's a blast, but...
I need to rewatch Doomsday.
You should rewatch it.
I don't think I was ready for it at the time.
Doomsday's a blast. But you can tell, I mean, Predator is one that I kept thinking of.
Oh, 100%.
What was the other one I kept thinking of?
Aliens is...
Aliens is definitely it. Evil Dead is one that he claims. He goes, this is kind of my Evil Dead movie.
Totally see it.
Yeah, Evil Dead. Because at one point, towards the end, they splash blood at the camera.
There's the bit there where Spoon is fighting the one werewolf in the kitchen is very Evil Dead.
Very Evil
Dead.
He
stabs it like 1,000 times.
And there's that amazing scene where apparently it's the guy's bandages with the intestines falling out.
Yeah.
Every time I watched it until this time, I thought it was the dog was eating his intestines.
It's pulling on the bandage, right?
It's pulling the bandages. Yeah.
It's hard to tell. I remember that one time, like the first time I watched it, going like, "Oh, why is that dog killing this guy?" Like,
but I forgot. First of all, I laughed at that anyway. That was funny. Yeah, it was a funny piece of dark humor. But then it's even funnier because the guy throws up on his head.
Yeah, it's so good. Yeah.
So no, there. I mean, this is a pretty funny movie.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
It has a good time.
He has Neil Marshall throughout his movies has kind of a sixth sense of humor.
Yeah.
Doomsday is the one I think of quite a bit with that.
Yeah, I think The Descent does too, actually. Yeah. Not as much so.
No.
But The Descent does too. I like that he went, by the way, from making a movie that's totally male-dominated cast with one female in a supporting role to a movie that's completely female-dominated cast with one male in a very small supporting role.
I almost think that was a response to this movie because the subplot with Megan... the female character in this movie is weird and, as the kids say, problematic in some ways.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
It's, he's even said, he goes, the subplot, he goes, I didn't think it was necessary. I didn't think it added anything, but I kind of had to go along with the circumstances. The studio basically, there was some interference on this from people other than him.
She doesn't serve a lot of a purpose.
He cut a lot of it from the movie, is what he said. And there are still, it's still, it's the one part that doesn't work.
No, and they give weirdly contradictory motivations for her, too, because they try to explain that, first they try to explain that she was with the military group as a zoologist to help them, like, track down the werewolf. Mm-hmm. And then they're like, no, just kidding, she was a member of the family? Mm-hmm. I don't know.
Yeah, and at some point they call her a bitch.
Yeah.
And it's just weird. The whole thing is very strange.
It's kind of funny. It's kind of funny.
No, I could see how someone could go.
Sure.
It's kind of gross. I'm kind of with you. I think The Descent kind of plays as kind of a response to that in a lot of ways. even Doomsday. A couple other. I forgot, and I remembered this when I read it. This was originally like broadcast. This was a sci-fi original movie in the United States.
What?
It was released overseas. It ended up getting like a one week run at LA's Egyptian Theater. But it was never actually really released in theaters in the United States.
Wow.
And it wasn't a straight to video. It premiered on Sci-Fi and then went to DVD in an uncut version of it.
This is the best sci-fi movie.
Yeah, I think so. I think the only reason I paused for a second is I think there are like one or two other sci-fi movies
decent
like this
that got
produced like overseas and then I'm like even I think even the pilot of Battlestar Galactica kind of counts because it was originally produced overseas and then I think they aired it on time.
Gotcha.
And the other, this is a fun piece of trivia, some of the corpses hanging in the basement were originally created for and used in Event Horizon.
Oh wow. Yeah. Crazy. So. Wonder if he's pals with Paul Anderson.
Who isn't?
Right. He's a friend of mine. Okay, interesting. Yeah, like Dog Soldiers a lot. Big fan.
Me too.
Yep.
By the Scream Factory DVD.
Yeah. I gotta get on that. I gotta do that.
Special features.
For sure.
Yeah. That's it for me. We've talked a lot.
Yeah. 2002. How long did we go this week?
We're coming up on like an hour and 50 minutes.
Oh my gosh. Well, you know what? We're just making up for lost time.
Exactly. We're gonna be back on schedule. We'll figure it out.
Should we do a random year generator real quick?
You want to do that?
Yeah, let's do
it. What do we want to do? What decade do you
want? Well, I counted what we've done so far.
Okay.
Okay. This will mark our third foray into the 2000s. I'm counting 2016 as 2000s. I know it's a different decade technically, but this will be, and then we've done three into the 90s. We've only done two into the 70s and the 80s.
Okay.
So I'm either, did you pick 2002? So
it was, I picked 2002.
Okay. I just want to make sure. I didn't want to take your pick. So I'm either going to go 70s or 80s.
Okay.
Which would you prefer, 70s or 80s? Narrow it down for me. Should we go back to the land of excess or hippies?
For some reason, I think it's... I don't want to, like... but that's the thing. I don't want to, like, jump in on your year. Yeah. But for some reason, I think 70s sounds kind of...
Let's go 70s. 70s.
Okay, what ones from the 70s have we done?
We've done 76.
Uh-huh.
And we've done 71.
77.
Oh, 77 was what we did.
Nope. I just said...
Oh, that's the year we're doing. Okay. All right. We're
you
doing
wanna
1977.
You want to look on the air?
Yeah, let's take a look and see what we got. I mean, we're already running long. We might as well give people a taste of things
far.
To come.
Ooh, okay. I think I already know.
Okay, what do we got?
A couple we're going to do here.
What do
Actually,
we got?
I think it's kind of a fun year. Hills Have Eyes.
Okay.
The Sentinel.
Okay.
Suspiria.
Okay.
Exorcist II, The Heretic. which the only two people that like Exorcist II Heretic are me and Martin Scorsese.
I'm tempted.
I have the Blu-ray box set. Okay, Audrey Rose, Rabid, that's the Cronenberg movie.
Yep.
House, Japanese movie, Orca. Kingdom of Spiders, Empire of the Ants, Day of the Animals.
We should do all three of those.
Shockwaves.
Shockwaves.
We don't need to do Shockwaves.
Yeah, that's all right.
Although we could, you know what, Shockwaves might be a good strategic move because we could... We could leech off of some of the Shockwaves podcast listeners.
Yeah,
people that search for
trick them. People.
Eraserhead, Jungle Holocaust.
Well, I think I know which ones we're gonna pick. I'm pretty sure.
Martin. Ooh, Martin.
Ooh, can you find Martin? Is the problem? That's my one hesitation.
Remember
about
Remember, the
Martin.
Only place I've ever been able to find Martin, well, other than Netflix, I believe, probably by mail.
Yeah.
It's Thomas Video, the old video store here in
town.
Yeah,
it's gone.
They had it. Halloween with the new Addams Family.
Well, we've got some options.
We do have some options.
Yeah. 77.
Yeah, we'll have to check it out. Oh, my gosh. It just popped in my head. I think this is my dad's graduation year, too.
Oh, we need him to write up a quiz for us. Multiple choice, please. All right.
All right. So, yeah, we'll be back with everybody in the 70s.
Yeah.
Hopefully
see you there.
Go along too long for you.
Yeah.
They
made it through.
Ready to go?
Yeah, let's get out of here.
Right, bye-bye, man and boy.